daughters hug their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air. And Mumy and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow closed at a record high today at 11,727, beating its previous record set on January 14, 2000. We'll have the closing numbers at the end of the newscast. North Korea has announced plans to conduct its first nuclear weapons test. The announcement concerns experts who say any flaws in the design of the suspected underground test site could release radiation into the atmosphere. In Washington today, House Speaker Dennis Hastert refused to resign as the fallout from the resignation of Representative Mark Foley continues. House leaders are facing questions about why they didn't act more aggressively after first becoming aware that he was sending sexually explicit emails to underage pages. One conservative newspaper, The Washington Times, said in an editorial that Hastert must, quote, do the only right thing and resign his speakership at once. In Stockton, California today, President Bush expressed confidence in Hastert's ability to deal with the scandal. Mr. Bush also said he supports an investigation into the matter so that all the facts can come out. Mr. Bush said he was disappointed that Hastert, quote, would violate the trust of the citizens who placed him in office. In Gaza, five Palestinians were injured today in an Israeli airstrike. An official said the strike was aimed at a car carrying Islamic militants suspected of being involved in recent rocket attacks against Israel. In Saudi Arabia today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice appealed for an end to the Palestinian fighting. She's on a Middle East tour and later plans to visit Lebanon and Iraq. Also today, Rice's chief spokesman confirmed that a meeting did take place on July 10, 2001, between Rice and then CIA Director George Tenet. But the spokesman said the information she received was not new. In his new book, Bob Woodward characterized that meeting as an emergency wake-up call that Rice politely dismissed. In Baghdad today, Sunni and Shiite lawmakers endorsed Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's peace plan to stop the sectarian violence, but said details still need to be worked out. The plan aims to give all sides a say in how security operations are conducted. Meanwhile, more than 50 people were killed in Iraq today. The U.S. military also announced that 9 soldiers and 2 Marines have been killed since Sunday. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The European Space Agency says photos from one of its satellites shows record losses of ozone over Antarctica. This year, the hole in the ozone layer is expected to be nearly half the size of North America. Laboratory Corporation of America has signed a $3 billion deal with UnitedHealthcare to become its exclusive national laboratory. The 10-year deal begins in 2007. The National Labor Relations Board issued rulings today that could have broader implications for the labor force. It redefined which workers unions can represent. The Census Bureau reports that in every state except Alaska, American homeowners spent 21% of their incomes on housing in 2005. Moody's is predicting that housing prices will fall in more than 100 metropolitan areas. The firm says the Northeast, Florida, and California will be among the hardest hit. There were more than 100,000 job cuts in September led by the auto industry, which said it would cut nearly 34,000 jobs. Light sweet crude settled today at $58.68. The Dow closed at an all-time high today, beating the past record close of 11,722, set on January 14, 2000. The Dow was up 57 points at 11,727, NASDAQ up 6 points at 2244, S&P 500 up 3 points at 1334. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's Tuesday. I'm Bob. And, you know, toward the end of the program last night, I said we would get away from the Foley issue. And sure enough, I've got a reason to. And this all ties together. This all works together, what I'm going to tell you about. Now, it was buried in the QNN newscast sometime after the break, but this should be this is a news story that should be shouted from the rooftops. And I'm talking about the National Labor Relations Board decision in a line of cases that are referred to as Kentucky River. The short, sweet way of dealing with this issue is for me to simply say, don't get sick. Don't have to go to the hospital. In a healthcare system in this once great nation that is unutterably broken, it has just gotten significantly worse. In essence, registered nurses who, you know, the RNs, the LPNs, and the CNAs, certified nursing assistants, they are the backbone of any healthcare system. Yes, I mean, doctors go to school for a long time. They rack up humongous debt in the process. The training is hellish. Frankly, in America, we should probably re-examine how we train doctors. The residency program is barbaric, as is the internship. Agnes has worked in a couple of hospitals along the way. She can probably add an amen to that. Agnes, am I right?
Yes, you are.
How are they treated in hospitals?
They're treated horribly. You work sometimes around the clock. You go.
Well, I mean, you don't get to go home. There's a little cot in a closet somewhere, right?
There's a cot back in the doctor's lounge. If you're lucky, or if you're working ER, you just go and grab an open cot and you sleep for maybe 20, 30 minutes until the next patient comes in. Depends on where you are.
Okay, so that's no way to train a doctor.
No.
I mean that's fraternity house hazing.
Actually, it's almost like brainwashing because you become so sleep-deprived that you can't do your job adequately. You know, and a lot of the residents and doctors rely on the nurses to keep them going. Unfortunately, they're working the nurses the same way.
Well, it just got worse, dear.
Great.
Because the Kentucky River line of cases, I got this from John Sweeney today. He's president of the AFL-CIO. The National Labor Relations Board, dominated by Bush administration appointees, well, he says appointees, I say goons, announced a decision which welcomes employers to strip millions of workers of their right to have a union. That's right, because it has been determined by the National Labor Relations Board, a gang of Bush thugs who wouldn't know, a Band-Aid from a speculum, that nurses, registered nurses, are supervisors. Because occasionally a registered nurse will look at another registered nurse, or a registered nurse will look at an LPN or a CNA and say, you know, I'm up to my elbows in caca here. Could you deal with patient X down the hall? Yeah, dear?
The only problem with that is it's not just RNs. LPNs are considered supervisory positions homes.
Yeah, but this line of cases deals with RNs.
If they don't have a union, well, RNs are considered professionals. LPNs aren't.
Well, RNs just got stripped of their right to be in a union.
They really need that desperately. Because if you don't have a union behind you, you have no protection.
Well, see, I understand that. I understand that. But RNs, under this decision by this gang of godless, soulless, motherless, punk-ass SOBs, I'm trying to be kind here, just got stripped of their right to be represented by a union. And in turn, you, Americans, me, all of us, just got stripped of our right to have appropriate and adequate health care in a hospital setting. Because nurses are supervisors and are therefore unentitled to union representation. Now, I said that this had deeper meaning. This has ramifications all across the labor front. What if a guy, and you know, there are people who have had union experience. There are union members who listen to this program. What if a guy's on a construction site? And he's the senior master electrician, or the senior master pipe fitter, or the senior, you name it. And he's the guy that says, "Hey, Joe, go over there and do that," as part of the job that he is involved with, or you know, bring me a couple of 2x4s. Empty the or the nurse who says, "Would you empty that bedpan for me, please? Could you bring me a tourniquet? Could you get the phlebotomist down here?" Being able to the fact that you do those things, according to the Bush administration's National Labor Relations Board, which by the way issues decisions with incredible slowness. Got around to issuing it today. Today's decision, this is from the dissent from NLRB members Liebman and Walsh. Today's decision threatens to create a new class of workers under federal labor law, workers who have neither the genuine prerogatives of management nor the statutory rights of ordinary employees. In that category may fall most professionals, among many other workers, who by 2012 could number almost 34 million. Accounting for 23.3% of the workforce. Kittens. Is this beginning to sink in? Are you beginning to get an idea of how far-reaching this is? See, one of the fastest growing, and they're not associated with the AFL-CIO anymore, but that's not at issue here. One of the fastest growing unions in this country is the SEIU. The Service Employees International Union. And they represent nurses in some instances. They represent people who are janitorial staff, maintenance staff. They represent a broad array of working people. And they are among the fastest growing unions in the country. And that had to be stopped. Because nothing threatens the George Bush ownership society quite like people who are empowered to stand with other like-minded individuals and demand fairness, decency, and respect. Now, what do the nurses, what do these registered nurses need to do? They need to walk out. But of course, if they do that, then they feel awful because they are stepping away from the single most profound reason that they are in the jobs they're in the first place. They didn't become nurses to get rich. They didn't become nurses because they like being around sickness, despair, and death. They became nurses because they have a reverence for life. Men and women alike. And if they walk off the job, they leave people in a lurch, and management knows that. And they know that they can prey on the fundamental decency of these men and women who spend their waking hours looking after people in the most fragile parts of their lives. And the Bush administration has preyed on that. And you hope that there's some sort of a divine or universal or karmic justice that will catch up with anyone who would abuse, as the National Labor Relations Board has abused, these incredibly hardworking, decent Americans. Now, basically, what it boils down to is the NLRB is maneuvering to keep as many workers as possible from the most basic right to have a collective voice on the job. Go look at the First Amendment. Isn't freedom of association in the First Amendment? Most of us define freedom of association as the right to be with whom we want to be, to have as our friends, our associates, whom we want to have, to go and come at will and pleasure, our own, our basic liberty. That has been taken out behind the building and had its throat slashed today by the National Labor Relations Board. Does this make sense? I hope to God it does. The memo from Mr. Sweeney says the immediate implications of the Oakwood Healthcare Inc. case, which is the formal name of this Kentucky River decision. The immediate implications are devastating to workers in the healthcare industry and potentially in other industries where professional employees direct or assign the work of others. The board rewrote broad definitions of supervisory duties such as assigning work, responsibility to direct, and use of independent judgment. In fact, the board decided that if an employee spends as little as 10 to 15% of their time performing supervisory functions, that they will be considered to be supervisors and thus be stripped of the right to have a union. Welcome, welcome to the ownership society. Sad thing is, though, it's working people that's going to get owned. Dig? Two other cases were released today. Golden Crest Healthcare Center, Croft Metals, Inc. Applications of the new standard set forth in the Oakwood decision. Oh, look, they're already using it. Mr. Sweeney's memo says it's a sad day for every American who works to put food on the table and gas in their cars when the rights they count on can be cynically eviscerated by a labor board that is informed more by political ideology than sound legal analysis. I respect John Sweeney. He said that so nicely. Because I wouldn't say it nearly as nicely. I'm trying really hard not to use the all those shameful little words that my mother would probably roll over in her grave to hear me use. If this administration expects to take this quietly, expects us to take this quietly, they're mistaken. Over the next week, working people will be coming together in the streets and cities across the nation to make sure everyone knows that the Bush administration is slashing workers' rights to have a voice on the job. You know what? Time for a little coalition building. What do you say? What do you say, working people come out on October 5th? That's 2 days from now. What do you say, working people come out in the streets with this protest that has been announced by World Can't Wait? Because it would be an excellent opportunity for the progressive liberal side of this nation, in other words, the decent side of this nation, to realize that all of our issues are the same. You know what? You don't want to have your union rights stripped from you? Maybe the best answer to that is to get rid of the pernicious influence of the Bush administration and drive that man from office. You don't have a problem with Kentucky River if you have a Democrat in the presidency. Because you see now, I'm not going to go there. But if you get rid of George Bush, peaceful and legally, if you get rid of George Bush, you get rid of all the ugly little scabrous toads that exist inside his administration. How about it? How about it, working people? How about it, people who somebody else signs your paycheck every week, every 2 weeks, every month? How about it? Is your job, is the job of thousands and hundreds of thousands of others worth it for you to get out on the street on Thursday, October the 5th, and demand an end to the Bush regime? Is it worth it to you? Is it worth it to you who aren't in the healthcare profession? Is it worth it to you to stand up and say that when people go into hospitals in the most fragile, delicate stages of their very existence on this little blue-green marble time machine that's hurtling through time and space and the universe, is it worth it to you to stand up and demand an end to the perfidy and the evil and the perversion that is the Bush administration? All these things are the same issue, and they end in the same place, and that place is a loud, persistent demand that George W. Bush be removed from office. Okay? You think? I think. I welcome your thoughts. The phone number is 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
President's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good sip drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade. I want to stop the war, because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
Thank you. The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
I'm Sarah Rich. My daughter, Suzanne Swift, is an Iraq combat veteran who was sexually harassed and abused while she was deployed in Iraq by her superior officers. The Bush regime is remaking the world in a disastrous way for generations to come. On October 5th, march through the streets, walk out of school, refuse to work, and don't shop. To bring the war, the torture, the abuse of our military, the whole Bush program to a halt, we must act now to drive out the Bush regime. October 5th, be there. WorldCan'tWait.org, 866-973-4463. It can be done.
People should be free to enter into any kind of relationship they want to enter into.
People should be free to enter into the relationships that they choose.
I think different states are likely to come to different conclusions, and that's appropriate.
When it comes to conferring legal status on relationships, that is a matter left to the states.
I don't think there should necessarily be a federal policy in this area.
This message brought to you by Lynn and Dick Cheney.
Welcome back. 27 minutes past the hour. I cannot tell you how incensed I am. I mean, now wait a minute. I'm not going to be dishonest or anything. I knew this was coming. We knew this was coming. Because this is what the Bush administration does. If you work for a living, you don't need rights. Your management, your boss will take care of you, because bosses are always good, right? Yeah, not. Let's go to the phones. Jennifer is calling in. Jennifer, welcome to the program. You're a nurse?
Yes, I've been a nurse for 33 years, and I have seen it all.
Okay.
I would love to not be a nurse anymore. Not because I don't love nursing, because I do. But the way things are today, I mean, I've seen the profession change over the years. And, you know, 25 years ago, it was really a nice job.
Uh-huh.
You could go to work and you could do really good nursing care because you were staffed well. And, you know, your patients got everything they needed, and you went home feeling really gratified that you've done something worthwhile. Now I've been working in long-term care recently,
mm-hmm.
and it's paperwork, and the workload is just unbelievable. I mean, we are not staffed for the acuity that we have. 25 years ago, people did not get herded in and out of a hospital setting like, you know, cattle. Now it's get them in, get them out, get them in, get them out. and they send them to long-term care facilities. So you don't have all those cute little old ladies and little old men who are stable. Now you have IVs and tube feedings and, you know, all kinds of critical care. And you're just not staffed for it. My most recent job is in assisted living, which is an absolute joke. That is not assisted living. It's skilled nursing. And we're not staffed for skilled nursing. Not only that, but I wind up with two buildings to take care of after 7 o'clock at night. Two buildings. If I have an emergency in one building, nothing happens in the other, and heaven help me if I have two emergencies.
Can I ask you, Jennifer, is this a private corporation that you're working for?
That's kind of what I was getting to. Most healthcare facilities are no longer privately owned. They are owned by corporations, big corporations. And big corporations do not see anything but money.
Sort of like an absentee landlord, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, that's all they see is how much revenue can they get? How much work can they put on their people for how little money? You know, they count numbers. They don't count what you're doing for your residents. They don't move people out of assisted living because they've become skilled. Good heavens, that would cost them money. And yet they don't staff for skilled nursing. So, you know, you're in such a miserable bind. And I never come home anymore feeling like I did a good job. Never. And heaven help you if you make a mistake. Oh, my God, don't make a mistake. You know?
Right. Well, because it all rolls downhill, and instead of it being a doctor's malpractice issue, it becomes the nurse's fault.
And just, you know, you run through your shit.
Well, are you a union nurse?
No. I live in Washington, and at one point, fairly recently, the SEIU tried to, get us unionized. And, oh, my gosh, it was horrible. They totally shut them out. There was no way they were going to let us unionize.
What kind of tactics did management use to keep you from organizing?
What they did was they would have these staff meetings, and they'd say the union did all these terrible things. The union has somehow or another come in here and found addresses and phone numbers of employees and are contacting them. And, of course, no one ever was contacted, but that's what they were told, that the union was doing all these nasty things, you know, all these dirty, underhanded things.
Did they tell you patient care would suffer if you were organized?
Absolutely, and that we would take a cut in pay.
A cut in pay?
A cut in pay, absolutely.
Oh, because you'd be paying union dues.
Right. We weren't gonna benefit at all by a union.
Well, you know, you know,
most CNAs are not very educated people. They fell for it.
Well, sure. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I mean, and I'm not looking down my nose at anybody, but it's not the long term. It's not the longer educational format that an RN or even an LPN is.
Right.
Well,
and I'm an LPN, but I am considered a supervisor. So
what do you? Well, Jennifer, what do you supervise?
I supervise CNAs.
And an RN supervises you?
In some settings, yes.
How many, just so people can get an idea of what modern hospital, the modern hospital experience is like, how many patients are you responsible for, Jennifer?
The last time I worked on a surgical unit in a hospital, I only had, I had 5 patients, but I did not have a CNA. I did not have any help at all. I had 8 IVs. 8 IVs that I had to monitor. That's a lot of work. And one of my patients was so critical, he could have died in minutes. He had just come out of the recovery room where he'd had a bilateral inguinal hernia repair done. So, not hernia, but they had cut into the vein, the inguinal, you know, or artery.
Yeah.
So he had just come out of the recovery room, and if he started bleeding, he would have been gone in minutes. So I had to monitor him very carefully. I was in that room every 15 minutes for 5 hours. Now, what happened to all my other patients while I was in there? You know, there was nobody to do my blood pressures and take vital signs for me. There was nobody to help with AIDS care, you know, getting people ready for bed. Forget about back rubs. We don't do that stuff anymore. We don't do that stuff. But, you know, people need to brush their teeth and wash their face and get their beds straightened up so they can sleep at night. There wasn't anyone to do it. I had to do all of that. I had to do all of my medications. And plus, I had to monitor this man because I sure as hell didn't want him to die on my watch.
Well, but, I mean, those are some hellish choices to have to make in the course of in the course of your job, in the course of your occupation, Jennifer.
This is incredible.
What does it do to you at the end of the day?
Well, you come home feeling bad. You're tired. You're exhausted. You're mentally drained. You're kicking yourself in the butt because you should have done this better and you should have done that better. And the burnout is just incredible. That's why I went into long-term care. I just couldn't deal with that anymore. I just couldn't. It's just too critical.
Well, now are you talking about something that's unique to you, Jennifer, or are you talking about something that you also see happen in other members of the nursing community?
Every nurse will tell you the same story. There is not a nurse that's been a nurse for more than a year that doesn't have horror stories to tell you.
What? How long is your shift?
Well, they try to get you in some places to work 10 and 12-hour shifts. I refuse to do it. I only work 8 hours for the simple reason that, you know, things are bad enough as they are without putting yourself in such an untenable situation where, you know, you're going to be so exhausted you can't function properly anymore. You know, you've got to think on your feet. You can't be exhausted. You just can't.
Jesus.
And, you know, and interns, let's not even talk about that. Interns are garbage. They are just garbage.
They're treated like trash.
Yeah, so are nurses.
Yeah. I mean, this
treated terribly.
Just
the other night I had a maintenance man go off on me and tell me to kiss his ass and called me a bitch. That's the way nurses are treated.
You know, that there's something fundamentally wrong, Jennifer. It strikes me that the scenario, the scene that you're describing to me is a healthcare system that is founded upon abuse.
It is, and yet the state is so big on not abusing patients, you know. But it's okay to abuse the staff, and it's so wrong. I mean, I have had patients bite me, sit on me, kick me, slap me, do all sorts of things to me, throw things at me, and there's nothing I can do about that. But Lord help me, don't even say a sour word to one of them.
Well, would we be better off, in your estimation, if we were dealing with a universal health care situation?
Yes. Absolutely. We've got to stop making nursing or healthcare a money-making business. That is our biggest downfall. And now, in order to keep from giving nurses higher wages, they're importing nurses from third-world countries, which is creating a very bad situation in those countries. We're importing nurses from India, the Philippines.
Sure. Pakistan.
Yes, all over. And some of them are very good and some of them are not. The nurses from India don't have much training at all. They're not good nurses.
Ugh.
And what makes it really difficult is that their language barrier is hard on patients.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're not in the best shape to begin with, trying to sort out pidgin English. And I'm not being hard on an immigrant.
No, I'm not either.
But there are places where the language becomes critical.
Right.
And I would think this is one of them.
Plus, they have a very hard time documenting things, which is important, you know?
Sure.
I tease them all the time. Tell them, you know, you write with an accent.
Well, you know, I'm deadly serious. I'm deadly in earnest, Jennifer, about the concept. Don't get sick in America.
No, and the sad thing is we pay more for health care in this country than anywhere else in the developed world. And
get less.
Get the leash. So the system is broken.
Well, I remember Dennis Kucinich telling me a couple of years ago that what we already spend on health care in this country could fund a universal health care plan that would be the envy of the planet.
And we have a model. We have Medicare. You know, say what you want about Medicare.
It works.
It does work, and it would be a really good model for our health care system in this country. And it should not be privatized. It should not.
Well, and that's the point. That was the next point I was going to make, Jennifer. It works for so long as we recognize that when you let Republicans and so-called conservatives and free marketeers tinker with it, that's, you know, that they're not tinkering. They're not tinkering to fix. They're tinkering to kill it. You know, they've got a goal. A Republican has a goal. Killing Social Security, killing Medicare, killing anything that is good for people who are having hard times or have lived their lives and paid out and served this nation. You know, look what they do to the VA.
I know. It's pathetic.
I mean,
but we've always treated our veterans horribly. That goes back to the Revolution. You know, during the Revolutionary War, our soldiers, some of them didn't even have pants.
Oh, I know.
When they got out of the army, they were tossed to the curb like, we don't need you anymore. And we're not going to do anything for you. Even though they were promised land, but they were never told how to acquire it. It's all documented.
Oh, yes.
This is a very nasty country. It's a very nasty country. And it's getting nastier all the time.
Well, I fear you're right.
And what's very sad is that, you know, for a while there, we were improving. We were moving in the right direction. We were establishing programs, social programs for people who needed it. And then all of a sudden, everything took a turn when Congress became Republican.
Well, and they told us all along, did they not? They told us what they wanted to do, but a lot of people said, well, you know, Jesus is their friend, so, you know, they therefore had to be put into power. And it makes my eyeballs ache, Jennifer. Yes. Honest to God, it does.
Less government would be fine if it didn't kill us off. You know what I mean? They're always talking about they want to make the government smaller, smaller, smaller. Yeah, you can drown it in the bathtub now.
Well,
but
yeah.
What have we got?
And but the thing is, what they mean by less government is less service to people who need service.
Right.
You know, less government? Hey, I'm up for a much smaller Pentagon.
Me too.
I am up for a much smaller executive branch.
Yep, yep. Yeah, we're pretty top heavy.
I mean, I remember seeing a story several months back, and it made my eyes roll back in my head, Jennifer. Damn, we spend something nearly $100 million or more dollars per year on the PR budget of the White House.
Isn't it pathetic? But going back to nursing, I don't foresee good things happening here. What I foresee happening is our health care system becoming more and more primitive. Because at this point, you know, you can walk through nursing homes, and it's almost like you get the sense that it's a warehouse.
It is. It's a warehouse for people.
Yeah, and people are treated like they don't matter. Not because the staff wants to do that, but they have no choice.
Well, you can only spread the butter so thin on the toast, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and management does not care. Management, nurse managers like directors and so forth, they are just having to please the corporation. It's always corporate said this and corporate said that. You know, and when I say, look, this is not a one-nurse job. This is a two-nurse job. Well, corporate won't budget us for that. Corporate doesn't want it.
Well, you know, there are just places in life where the profit motive doesn't have any business. I would suggest that human life is one of those places, or things affecting human life. Your health care, your clean drinking water, your electricity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your ability to be warm in winter and cool in summer. The profit motive provides no good whatsoever.
I know.
In that calculus.
I know. Well, you know, my water here is privatized. Cost me $2,500 to hook up to it.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
How's that grab you?
Well, I know. Well, see, we use taxpayer dollars here in West Virginia to build a lovely little public service district to bring so-called city water out here to where we live. And it's nice to have, because after all the blasting and all the strip mining, what was once a beautiful, crystal clear well that we had on this property is now muddy. A puppy. I hear a puppy.
You hear two of them. They're going bonkers.
But as soon as we got it built, we turned around and we sold it off to West Virginia American Water Company, which is owned by American Water Company, which is owned by the Germans and in a holding company that's English.
Isn't that terrible? See,
and our service keeps going down.
I know.
And the price keeps going up because we have to service American Water Company's daggum stockholders instead of servicing the people drinking the water.
Yeah.
You know, but it's the same thing in healthcare. You know, if you're servicing look, Bill Frist. His family ran HCA, Healthcare Corporation of America. And this place has been, I mean, this organization has been busted time after time after time for Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, state fraud, all manner of fraud. And they do that because they're trying to nickel and dime the Frist family into success. And it just makes me crazy. Jennifer, it's so good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again sometime. And say hi to the puppies for me.
Thanks for taking the call, and I do enjoy your show very much, Bob.
Well, thank you very kindly. You have a wonderful evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see. Let's go to Ed. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Going pretty good, I reckon.
Sounds like the nurse knows what she's talking about.
It does indeed, doesn't it?
Yeah, my wife are one, so I know what they're going through. And
well, they treat them like dirt, don't they?
Hey, Bob, she is a supervisor, and you're talking about of a nursing home. And that place, I don't know how many beds they do have, but everything falls back on her. And I'll give you an example. They agreed, and she all she wanted was 32 hours a week, and most of it was over insurance. And once she went to work there, sometimes she makes it home as high as 4 o'clock in the morning, and she's supposed to work from 2:30 to 11. And the way the hospitals work it, they keep you so long, and then they get extra money from Medicare, Medicaid, whatever it is, Social Security. And then they release these people, admit them back to the nursing home, like 10 o'clock at night. Well, time they get through with the paperwork, it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning before they can get out of there. And I've asked her to quit there if she's got to work, if she thinks she has to work. Quit and go to McDonald's. The pressure ain't there. And it's like the dog chasing his tail. They try to get by as cheap as they can since these corporations has taken over ownership of all the nursing homes. And that creates a poorer health care for the people. Plus, the nurses has got more of a load put on them. And it just... that's the way it goes. It's just like Lowe's, the way they cut it and say, well, you can get by on this. And then a guy with a bad back has to carry his workload, his own stuff, to his truck. And so when he does that, that creates another situation. Well, they're doing it themselves. We'll cut some more. That's the same way the nursing thing is. and they holler about a shortage. There's really not a shortage of nurses. There's a quitting of nurses. Nurses are quitting because of the treatment they get.
Burnout.
And you can't get them to organize, and I'll tell you why. They're professionals. And, you know, it's like the school teachers. They halfway organize. And I've talked to my wife about going ahead and starting it, but the lady is right about the – we'd have no labor board to back them. Even at best, even when Democrats are in, the labor board changes it just depends on who's interpreting the law. And that, and believe me, I've dealt with them through the union enough to know them. And lost locked cases, should have been locked up. And we lost them because of the labor board and their interpretation of the way it should be. And then you had Fred Holroyd, you might have heard of.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
He was a dirty skunk, and he still is. He'd walk in a plant and turn out, pull the power and say, this is what a union shop is like. Or he would hold out the union dues on a Friday and then give it back to him on Monday. Said, that's what how much money you'd have drawn if you had a union. If a union can't get you more than your union dues, you don't need a union. In other words, if...
Well, they, all of those filthy tactics, Ed. You heard what Jennifer said. They tell you... They just sit there and lie to you.
Yeah.
Because at the base level, and you know this because you've been an activist in your own right, you know that people standing together are the one thing that a company fears more than any other.
It's like God come already. And the people don't realize what togetherness is. But these nurses, especially these supervisors, and I told you that's what my wife is, and I forget how many people fall back on her. You know, the other folks, if they make a mistake, then she's got the answer for it. And they got a big case. So one girl's got a 34-page list on why that the company let her go after so many years, and I'm not going to expose any of it on...
I understand.
For fear of jeopardizing her case, but she's got it before the state board now, and it looks pretty good. The state board is better than any labor board at its, like I said, at its best.
Yeah, but the problem is, Ed, when the NLRB steps in, you know, they supersede state action. So, you know, this business of declaring that because you asked another nurse to go and empty a bedpan, suddenly you're a supervisor is a bunch of dishonest crap.
Yeah. Well, they call my wife a supervisor, but she don't. The description that the board gives on supervisor is the right to fire and hire. My wife does not have that.
Well, see, that's why they've had to change the laws.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with the Bush administration. Everything the Bush administration does, it's, well, you know, we're not going to change the laws. We're going to clarify the laws.
Yeah.
So, of course, they clarified so much that now you can blow up mountains and just shove it all over into a stream and not have to worry about it. They clarified the Clean Air Act so that we can pump all the, they can pump all the mercury they want into the air. They've clarified the Clean Water Act. They're clarifying the fact that nurses don't really need unions.
Yeah, well, that jeopardizes the patient. But what it is, they would have some kind of on the job action. You know, they could act together. But I don't like arbitration is just as dirty. Let me tell you how arbitration works. Even a good arbitrator that tells you you've got a good case, you look at his record, and every one of them, except the ultra-conservative, try to split the case, right or wrong. In other words, if the union's in violation, they may rule that they're okay because they try to keep their case decisions equal so that the union will say, yeah, this is a pretty good one, this one's a fair,
because they
usually have nine to pick from, nine or seven.
And an arbitrator gets paid a princely ransom.
Oh, yeah. And I know we got one ruling from a guy out of Charleston Ross Hunter. I don't mind mentioning his name. I would recommend nobody get him. We won the decision, and there was probably $100,000 involved with it, but he said he didn't know how to collect the money, and he didn't know how to put the price on the case. All we did was win the case.
Won the battle and lost the war.
Yeah, I mean, arbitration is just as dirty as the labor board is. The only way that a man has got a right, we had a 30-day contract at all times. In other words, if a company violated the contract, we could serve strike notice on them and strike. But usually we didn't wait the 30 days. We just went ahead and done it because, you know, we knew the contractors better than the company did because most of them people, come and go. But
see, that's part of the value of a union, Ed. Asking every individual to go in and negotiate his own working labor terms with his employer is simply ridiculous.
Oh, they already got the land, they got the money, they got the machines,
they got the hire and fire.
Yeah. So it's like sending you out to California one man to put out the fire. It ain't going to work. One man against all the money and all the things that you go up against with the company, plus the intimidation and the if you would happen to win, and the isolation that is put on you by the company, and the men are afraid to associate with you too. And let me tell you, I've been there. I know how dirty they are. And then to hear some people like Steve O'Brien stand up and down the working man and not want a minimum wage be raised. You know how, what a sick mind.
I know.
All I can say. And on the veterans, let me tell you, I are one of them too, Bob. And it's disgusting to see the treatment. I had to change from the Beckley Hospital and go to Richmond before I could get the treatment I needed before they killed me, and they still almost done it over there. And when Bill Clinton was in, we was paying $2, and I'm talking about all the way back to World War II. The package deal that we had was based on service from then up to the time George Bush got in. And he arbitrarily took that and broke everything back and raised everything. Still, a prescription is a good deal at $8, but I'm talking about where it went to from 2 to 8, and the operations and stuff you have like that and your stays in the hospital are plumb out of sight. You might as well have a cheap insurance. And to see these veterans come back and have to live out of their car. And I know at one point Bush said, well, we're going to give them a $200 million raise. And it wasn't 6 weeks later until he took a total 2% of the total package since World War II and broke it back. And you know what it amounted to? $600 million. I mean, but they don't tell you that. But most of the veterans know, and you still have these guys wearing these purple-looking hats around backing that suck egg. is what gets me is, you know, where are they coming from? Is Bush paying them off, or have they been some big lieutenant colonel or something that's drawing up?
No, I think it's simpler than that, Ed. I think it's more a matter of the Republican determination. You know, there's a phrase out there called cheap labor conservatives. And it's a Republican determination to try to keep as many people as possible as poor and desperate as possible. Because if you can do that, then you've got a better chance at controlling the slave class.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. They can say what they want to about us having high tech and catching up. The only way we're going to keep up with our end of being able to work and so forth is better education. I think that's the biggest bunch of garbage that I ever heard. What they're really after is getting us back with the same wages or close to it that the Chinese get paid. then they'll be happy.
Well, then you've got a truly level playing field because everybody's starving.
That's the way they're going to level the playing field, or they're going to try it. Unless the people in this nation wake up, they're going to be looking from the bottom of the barrel up and no ladder.
It's about the truth of it. Ed, we've got to roll into the news here. So good to hear from you.
Same here, and I thank you for your time.
All right. You take care now.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye.
That's our good friend Ed from Fayetteville. Man's walked the walk and talked the talk. I'll tell you what, we've got to do news. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 877-443-2366. Fundamental question. Is it worth getting out and hitting the streets to protect not just your right to a decent job and a decent wage, a decent treatment, but that of others? Is it? I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow closed at a record high today, beating its previous record set on January 14, 2000. We'll have the closing numbers at the end of this newscast. House Speaker Dennis Hastert says he'll stay at his post despite calls for his resignation as the fallout from the resignation of Representative Mark Foley continues. House leaders are facing questions about why they didn't act more aggressively after first becoming aware that Foley was sending sexually explicit emails to underage pages. In Stockton, California today, President Bush said he supports an investigation into the matter so that all the facts can come out. Mr. Bush also said he was, quote, disgusted by the revelations and disappointed that he would violate the trust of the citizens who placed him in office. In North Korea today, officials announced they plan to conduct the country's first nuclear weapons test that drew protests from South Korea and Japan, which vowed harsh measures in response. United Nations Ambassador John Bolton is expected to take the matter to the Security Council. In Italy today, a hijacked Turkish Airlines plane with 113 people aboard safely landed. The two Turkish hijackers are in custody. Officials say they were protesting Pope Benedict XVI's planned visit next month to Turkey. In Iraq today, more than 50 people were killed around the country. 9 U.S. soldiers and 2 Marines have been killed since Sunday. In Kuwait, officials say a female U.S. soldier was found dead yesterday of a non-combat-related injury. An investigation has been launched. In eastern Afghanistan, 2 more American soldiers have been killed and 3 wounded. NATO is expected to take command there later this week. An estimated 10 to 12,000 American troops are now based in that region. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is now in Afghanistan. He said the war against the Taliban can never be won militarily, so instead they should be brought to the government. Democrats are now accusing him of waving a white flag of surrender. In Pennsylvania, one of the girls who was shot at an Amish schoolhouse died today, bringing the total death toll to 5. 5 others remain hospitalized. Educators and law enforcement experts are expected to hold a summit soon to discuss school violence and how it can be stopped. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Men's Fitness magazine has named Pennsylvania's Dickinson College as the fittest in the nation in terms of its commitment to student health. Last year's winner was Brigham Young University. A survey of young Americans between the ages of 12 and 19 finds that about a third failed treadmill tests. The research, published in the Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine, blames sedentary lifestyles. The editor of the Miami Herald has resigned. That's after revelations that the U.S. government paid some reporters at the Herald's Spanish-language sister publication to write and air pro-American broadcasts to Cuba. New Census Bureau data shows housing costs are growing in nearly every part of the country and becoming a burden in the Midwest and suburbs nationwide. The parent company of Airbus has delayed delivery of the A380 Super Jumbo jet until the middle of next year. This latest delay may force some airlines to cancel their orders. General Motors reported its U.S. sales fell nearly 7% in September compared to the same period last year. Meanwhile, Toyota's U.S. sales rose more than 20% from a year ago. Ford reported the first monthly sales increase since January with a 5% boost in sales. Light sweet crude settled at $58.68 today. The Dow was up 57 points at 11,727. NASDAQ up 6, S&P up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Bob, and having some great conversations here, and I want to keep it rolling. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in, get in line. 877-443-2366 is the number, and we go to Michelle calling from Texas. If Agnes will make that connection, please, dear. Thank you. Hi, Michelle.
All right.
How are you?
What happened, Bob? Pretty good. More relaxed today. I called in and talked to Bruce on Thursday, and I was so upset. And well, it's better now. And I tell you, it's nice to get a little bit of a break from Foleygate. I'm glad you're talking about other stuff that's going on in the world, because it's important. I know, but it's not the only thing. And my husband is an ICU doctor, and you know, the nurses are an essential part of that
yes.
chain, and you know, it's not just the nurses; it's the whole structure is quite broken.
Yes, well, and there are places in this country, Michelle, where we can see the difference at work. One of those, to the best of my knowledge at least, is up at Cleveland Clinic. Now, if you become a fellow as a physician, if you become a fellow at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation, they don't care if you see one patient a day or 100. They just want you to be the best doctor you can be.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, most of the doctors in this country, in order to you know, pay off monumental student loans and have some sort of a meaningful lifestyle, have to maximize the number of patients they see, and that is the profit motive at work.
Right.
I like the idea of more doctors with less patients. I mean, that seems to make sense to me. Does it to you?
Well, certainly. I mean, it's common sense, but that's not the way it goes. And, you know, the other big problem is, and I happen to know this because of being married to someone who's in this profession, and also because of the July 17th issue of U.S. News and World Report, where they did the best hospitals in America.
Mm-hmm.
And only 20% of all the hospitals in America have ICU doctors, have specialists
right.
in the ICU. And there's a lot of people that could be saved if there were ICU doctors, you know, intensivists is what they're called.
Right.
And if they were there, because, but they're not. They're not, because this system is so broken. And of course, the crap rolls downhill and nurses are almost at the bottom of the pile. It's awful, shocking, and absolutely par for the course of this administration. can't wait for this nightmare to be over.
And it is a nightmare, isn't it? And the question is, how do we? And I'm not trying to be obtuse, Michelle. How do we define over? You know, because they have done more damage in the 6 years they've been in office than most good presidents were able to do in eight. So, you know, I keep trying to remind people that, you know, when George Bush leaves on January 20th, 2009, and doesn't come back, that doesn't mean that the job is finished. That means that the job is just beginning.
The cleanup is just beginning. It's going to be like after Katrina. I'm counting on 2006, one step at a time, 2006 to clean out some of the rubbish. And I'm hoping that people will stay focused, stay committed, and start to put some of these do nothing Democrats out as well.
Well, it's absolutely time to do that, or else it's time to start being very proactive in teaching them how to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think some of these people can be taught, but they're not leaders; they have to be led.
I agree.
And as a consequence, you know, I hear all the time the right wing, you know, the religion freaks and everything. Well, you know, we're in a moral crisis in this country. No, we're in a leadership crisis in this country. We are in a malaise the likes of which we may never have actually seen. The people are asleep in front of their television, and they're so overworked and underpaid for the most part, that getting them politically active is next to an impossible task. And those of us who are willing to do it, Michelle, have got to take the bit in our teeth.
I couldn't agree with you more, Bob. I generally agree with you. And the point is getting people active. It's a big get out the vote thing this season. But it's going to take more than that. It's going to take this anger, this motivational anger, and it's unfortunately going to take situations like this with Foley and all the criminals. I mean, the list of wrongs and criminals is never ending in that.
Well, and it's Michelle, it's also going to take direction and focus, I think. And by that I mean I'm not trying to be overly critical, but I get a lot of the same email solicitations you probably do. You know, Move On needs another $25, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Move On does a wonderful job, but people want to put a, you know, we need $185,000 for a full page ad in the New York Times. Blah 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 blah. Right now, there are perfectly viable congressional candidates who have been utterly ignored by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. God only knows why. Well, I know why, because you know they're like DLC types. But Move On, for instance. I would love to see them, because, you know, a 30-day billboard doesn't cost that much. I'd like to see a billboard campaign go up in districts where these ignored congressional campaigns and do it generically with a national outdoor advertising company. Throw the bums out. Just, you know, red background, black letters, throw the bums out. And it doesn't have to be candidate-specific. Because we know who the bums are.
Howie Klein has his Act Blue page, and he's got a number of progressive candidates running, and they've pumped up quite a bit of money for them individually. They have on Saturdays on FireDogLake.com, they do an Act Blue page where they have the candidate come in and live blog with all the readers and commenters there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grassroots stuff like this, your show, the blogs. This is the new dynamic, and this, I think, will light a fire under the Democrats. Some of them are going to boil away. Some of them are going to actually pull their pants up and start acting like grown-ups that know what they're doing. And maybe a third party will emerge from this fiasco. It's hard to say.
Well, I worry about a third party, though, Michelle. I worry about us miscasting our our energies, because there are so many things that need doing right now. If a third party develops organically, I think that'll be okay. But we also need to remember, or at least this is the way that I've thought it out. There will never be a third party in this country. If a viable third party arises, it will by default become the second party.
Mm-hmm.
Because presidential politics and our congressional structure don't really admit for the possibility of third parties.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were originally designed for no parties.
Well, then you go back a little bit further, and it was, you know, the League of Seven Nations.
Mm-hmm.
That our Constitution was based on.
The Iroquois Confederation.
Mm-hmm. And when you go back and read their stuff, it was done by consensus. It was all these different tribes. It was much more, I guess, parliamentary, basically. And I think a third party could arise organically. I think that what's going on right now, Bob, honest to God, is a shakeup so deep into the very foundation of who we are as a country. This hasn't happened here before. This only became Nazi Germany recently.
Right, and we haven't seen this kind of a shakeup within our memory, and that's another theme that I try to work with here. I happen to be blessed to have a grandmother who was born in 1894. Who could tell me about being a young adult during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And that generation's gone now, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father is 81. He was a child during the Depression. So, you know, his vision of the Depression is only a child's vision. But the evils that this Republican administration and this Republican government are foisting on working men and women in this country has been tried before.
Yeah, oh, certainly. Certainly it's been tried before. But I think that because of how they've been changing the very foundation of how things have been, has had a more profound effect this time. I mean, you said it, you know, in 6 years he's managed to take us back into the Dark Ages. And I don't know, I have a feeling about this that this could be the shakeup. This could really be it. This could change everything. What Bush has done, the evil he's wreaked. I think it could change everything.
Well, and that's what's terrifying, because you know, once he signs these bills, the torture bill, the spying bill, Congress is a fundamentally spineless place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take a leader that I don't know that we're going to see to come in and lead them all to their senses. And no one, because of the political process and because of the campaign process, no one wants to have to stand up and defend against the idea that somehow, you know, you've made us less safe because we can't tap telephones and torture people. It's a very depressing, it's a depressing vision of the future. And, you know, if this was a program that was going out to just, you know, ordinary uncommitted Americans, I don't know how they'd respond to that, because, you know, they want to be told that everything is sunshine and light and Twinkies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's going to wear off. I think this is getting too big. Watergate, everybody knew about Watergate. Everybody did.
Mm-hmm.
And it had an effect, and it created change in the government. But
Michelle, if you look back at Watergate, from Richard Nixon's resignation to Ronald Reagan is 8 years. Mm-hmm. How much change did it really affect?
FISA.
Well, yeah.
The court was created.
Well, that's true. That's true. But what I'm...
I get your point. It's not that. I tell you, I try to buck myself up too, and I try to notice what all this information does to my insides and how I feel intuitively about it.
Uh-huh.
And last Thursday, when this bill sailed through, I was in tears. On and off all day, I was crying for my country.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe people weren't, like, in the streets. And nobody really even knew.
No. And the bill itself, I mean, did you ever get around to actually reading that monstrosity?
I did.
Well, guess what? You did something that 99 senators didn't do.
I know.
And, one of our moderators in the chat room, Lottie, sent me a note today. He did the hard work of digging out 10 of the, or 11 of the 13 people who voted in favor of the torture bill who are Democrats. They're all from the DLC, Michelle.
Oh, that's a surprise.
The only two who weren't were Jay Rockefeller and Frank Lautenberg. And, of course, we all know that Jay Rockefeller is a member of the Illuminati.
Right. Well, he's a Rockefeller, I'm pretty sure.
No doubt about it. But we're talking... God,
it's awful. It's awful. It's overwhelming.
There are times when I think that it has to be shattered into a million pieces before it can ever be fixed.
That's quite possible. And it could... It could happen. I'm saying I feel big change. I feel big change afoot. And this is the most hopeful I've been today that I've been in weeks. And I can't tell you exactly what it was. I mean, it could be the Foleygate thing, although I frankly have almost no interest in it, except for that it might wake people up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling that things are going to shift. I mean... I end my posts so often with, had enough yet? When have you had enough? What is it that's going to make you think you've had enough, you know?
Right. Where's the tipping point?
What's your tipping point? All that stuff is I end my posts with that in my blog.
And well, tell us the address for the blog, please.
Oh, that's Deep Confusion.
Yes,
.blogspot.com.
Deepconfusion.blogspot.com. I've been there. I've read. And you do a very good job. Is there anything in this country, Michelle, that would get people into the streets? I mean, maybe if their cable got turned off, or if the NFL season was canceled.
That might do it.
If Survivors, if the next episode of Survivor didn't go down, if NASCAR was to suddenly run out of gasoline.
Right.
But I've become very cynical about my fellow Americans.
No, you're right to be cynical. I don't think you're wrong. I have faith in a small percentage of Americans, but I feel something afoot, and I wish I could back it up materially, but I can't.
Well, I think the one thing that would be beneficial to us is we've got to add to the cause. We've got to add to the list of people who are willing to lead and to motivate. Because the one downside, the events that I go to, the places where I see voices of dissent being raised, while I'm always glad to see the committed people who come out for it. The downside of that, Michelle, is that at least where I am, I'm always seeing the same people.
Yeah.
And when you see that, you realize you're at zero population growth, and you know that nothing can come of it then.
Well, you have to look to history, because eventually people, they do get fed up. They get fed up, and change happens.
Yeah, well,
we're not a static culture.
Only 30% of the people in the colonies supported the revolution.
Right.
But, by the time the revolution was over, they were all patriots, and every last man had been at Valley Forge.
There you go. Well, see? You're making my argument for me.
I absolutely am. Michelle, it's so good to talk to you. I think it will. But, I hope we'll hear from you again.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
I think I am Charlie Brown.
He's a good man.
Yes, he is.
He's a good man. I've given him money.
Absolutely. All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That football. The willingness to always keep trying to kick that football. In many ways, that's where we are. That's not foolhardiness. That's determination. You know what I mean? Let's go and... Let's talk to Peter in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Well, I almost said, hey, Bob, welcome to your show. The older I get, the more concerned I become. Your callers earlier this evening got me thinking about something. There's something that you said quite a while back, and it has stuck with me, and I think about it often, and they brought it to mind. It was once you're talking about unions, and you made the remark, people not having unions, and you said, well, the corporations all have unions. They're called trade associations.
Sure.
And that really stuck with me, and I wanted to share something with you about that. You know, you had the caller, the nurse who called in, who talked about, you know, being understaffed and too many patients and that sort of thing. And I was going to call you and talk about nursing homes being in the same situation, only worse, but then your next caller was bringing up that very point about the nursing homes even more stingy with their dollar. But in any case, you know, I used to have a client. I don't have this client anymore, but it was the Florida Association of Homes for the Aging.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in Florida, aging is a growth industry. And the Florida Association of Homes for the Aging was a statewide, or still is actually a statewide association of all of the nursing homes, non-profit nursing homes. There were other associations for the for-profit nursing homes. But nonetheless, it was always amazing to me when I went there, because everything they talked about, everything, the whole place revolved around how can we help the nursing home. It was never, ever once how to help the patient.
No. It's yeah, exactly. It's how to get Medicare to up its daily rate.
Yes, and there was always this huge concern about how to deal. Back then, when 60 Minutes, still had a few teeth left, but this was before the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And there would occasionally be some sort of big report about nursing homes and, you know, patients being abused. There was always a big upset around the association when something like that came up, because the talk was how to get around it and how to put the press out so that, you know, to soothe everybody's nerves and all that sort of thing. But, there are other associations that I work with, too, and because they're current clients, I won't mention their names, but I kind of run in a circle that has to do with aging in the state of Florida. But the talk is how to benefit the patient and how to help the patient, and either in nursing homes or in other extended illness situations, et cetera, et cetera. But that's why that really stuck with me the time you talked about associations or trade associations being unions for corporations. And this stuff has got to stop. They have every damn advantage, every advantage.
Well, sometimes I think, Peter, I don't necessarily want a level playing field. I'd like for working people to have a playing field that they don't have to use hammers and pitons to climb up.
Well, isn't that the truth?
You know, the playing field at this point is so not level that it's straight up and down.
Well,
and we're on the bottom.
This is true.
And every time somebody starts, trying to claw their way upward, there's a trade association or, a libertarian free market foundation that, no, if workers, the free market will take care of the workers. You know, why do these people get away with even saying that crap anymore? It has been disproven a million doggone times.
Well, it has. And I have something else for you about the Florida Association of Homes for the Aging.
Okay.
You know, we talk about lobbyists and their relationship with legislators and this sort of thing. Well, I won't quote her name. I know her name. But she was the lobbyist to the associations located in Tallahassee, which is the capital. Most associations are located in the capital of any given state.
Sure.
Okay? So the lobbyist for the Florida Association of Homes for the Aging has been the lobbyist who actually was employed by the association, mind you. So this person represented all these nursing homes, was constantly in and out of the Capitol, and the association used to say, not in print, mind you, but internally and quite proudly, well, this person's name actually wrote those laws. You know, these legislators don't have a clue about this. They depend on the damn lobbyists to come in and write.
Because they're lazy, because they're incurious, because in many instances they are unintelligent. Maybe the one failing that the framers of the Constitution had, Peter, was that they assumed that intelligent people would always be involved in government.
Oh, yeah, okay, yes.
Just as an experiment sometime, start with the Senate, because there's fewer members. Go look at the individual websites. Pick out the bad grammar. Pick out the bad punctuation. Pick out the misspelled words. Look at the crappy nature of the websites.
Interesting. Good point.
You know, look at the public face that these people are putting out to us.
Right.
And you'll get a pretty doggone good idea for where we are with the state of American government.
Well, you know, individuals can't approach a congressman. I mean, maybe you can through an email, but if you get an answer, it's going to be a form letter, unless you're really, really lucky, or like in that senator's case, if you scroll on a piece of paper with the jelly stains on it, you know,
Senator Byrd.
Farce anyway. But, unless people have unions, and I assume that unions for employees also would hire a lobbyist to represent them at the Capitol. In other words, that would level the playing field to have some sort of representation. Is that the way it works?
Well, I don't know how it ends, how it works on the labor end of things. I would assume that the union leadership itself is its own lobby.
I see how you're saying.
And
this person that I'm mentioning actually worked for the association, but I guess her title was lobbyist, even though she really wasn't.
Well, yeah, and you know, I walked. It was almost a life changing experience being in D.C. for those couple of days. I walked down K Street. Because I'd heard so much about it, you know, I expected it to look like the gates of Mordor or something.
Oh, geez.
And somewhere along the way there was going to be, I'd go by the building that Jack Abramoff was in, and it had the big red eye over the top of it, but it didn't.
Sure, exactly, with the lightning bolt.
Yeah, but it didn't. It's all very Tony. It's all very nice. Beautiful, wonderful restaurants, and I'm such a foodie.
In other words, it's very mafia.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and people in, you know, people standing outside in couture dresses and silk suits and
Condi shoes.
And Condi shoes. You know, these are made from baby, you know, these are made from baby, these Ferragamo pumps, baby harp seal.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. You know, Condi keeps saying she can't remember any of the warnings of the meeting where they all went up there and it was a huge emergency and it was 10 on a scale of 10. Connie can't remember. I bet she can remember which pair of shoes she bought that day.
You're damn right she could.
Bet you can tell you the outfit she was going to wear with
them. Oh, it was the little Notori with the cute little jacket with the frog buttons. Oh.
Probably so.
Wait a minute. I know way too much about fashion.
Yeah, well, you know, you know, everybody's...
Well, you know, 13 years with Agnes, and, you know, honey, look at this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's play Agnes. Agnes, get it.
but this is, I mean, I don't, has the, did we go wrong? Where did we go wrong? Bless his heart, our good buddy Andy in Wales just emailed me.
Yeah.
You know, and I love it when they rub salt in the wounds. Doesn't this situation make you wish that those tax dodgers hadn't chucked the tea into the harbor? Being a subject isn't so bad.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, someone in the chat room several weeks ago said was sending a typing a fake email to England, and it was saying, "We're sorry about the tea party. We apologize. Please take us back.
Can we come back?"
I think
back
I know
now?
It was, but I'm not paused.
You know, but you know, the thing is, yeah, bless their hearts. They wouldn't. The United Kingdom wouldn't have any part of Orrin Hatch or Newt Gingrich or Jim Inhofe or Tom Coburn, any of these right-wing freaks. Yeah, because they're too. Do you understand that we've gone so far to the right that the right wing in Europe is like, what the hell are you people doing?
Uh huh. Yeah.
I mean, we're like crazy bad to the rest of the world now.
Oh yeah, we're laughing stock. The rest of the world is simply horrified, and the rest of the world looks down on our news media. To the point that they can't believe how shallow it is and how entertainment oriented and how non-reality based it is. They're just horrified.
Yeah, and you'll notice that today is the lead story today is not Mark Foley. It's the dude in, what is it, Bart, Pennsylvania?
Oh, I saw him today. There was a huge picture of him on some, you know, one of the major search engine homepages with the glasses, that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the woman, are you talking about the guy that...
That shot up the school yesterday.
Yeah, that guy.
Well, you know, we're talking about him instead of talking about the revelations in Bob Woodward's book.
I bet they're all wishing to God he had held a blonde hostage.
Would
have helped a lot.
Well, you know, Nancy Grace will be busy with this, and... Well, Bullwinkle's baby sister's gone from MSNBC, isn't she? She could have had a field day with this. Well, you know, Rocky. God, I hated her. But no, I'm at a loss. I'm honest to God at a loss today, Peter, because there are times when my head just hurts from looking at this nation and the world that this nation is, the freaks who are running this government are trying to create. And you know, like my conversation with Michelle, I don't know if it's fixable. In my heart of hearts, in my very soul, I have to believe that it's fixable.
Some days I it's hard. Some days are hard to get through.
Yeah, some days are bad days to have stopped.
I realize how stacked it is, and the corporations benefit from the government rulings and the corporate tax breaks, and so the networks don't present the news, and the spiral feeds itself, and it seems almost inescapable.
It seems like it's all just coming unglued, or I don't know, it's not coming unglued. It's consolidating.
Well. Anyway, I wanted to let you know that you're absolutely right. Yes, the associations are the unions of the industries that they represent, and
yeah.
Yes, the lobbyists write the laws. I have firsthand clear experience. I know it for a fact.
Oh, laziness, thy name is government. Peter, thank you so much.
I enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, it's always so much fun. Take care. Bye now. That woman could tell you which pump she was wearing that day. Oh God! Let's talk to Albert in Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, good evening, Bob. How are you today?
I'm well, I think.
As well as we can be doing.
Yeah.
I want to say hello to everyone in the chat room as well. What is it going to take? I don't know. I mean, I just got a credit card offering the bill. They want my home equity loan, $165,000, at incredibly low interest rates, and all I can think about is Bush borrowing more money than all 42 presidents combined in his short tenure from China and amongst other countries, bringing us into these, people can spend, they can shop, and, you get a shopping high when you can buy products and buy a new vehicle. My friend just bought a brand new vehicle yesterday, and, what do they care about a workers' union or... workers' rights, or they're buying sweatshop laden clothes. I mean,
and don't think twice about doing it.
Oh no, the shoes are $100. Oh yeah, but it only cost they only paid the workers 7 cents.
And the funny thing is, they'd be $100 if they made them over here.
Well, exactly. Well, they'd still be $100, but then the stockholders, they wouldn't get their dividend checks would be 10% less, and we can't have that because these corporations, they're people for the stockholders. And I used to work on Wall Street, and I mean, to think that people like that run anything in terms of, because they do control the money,
mm-hmm.
They control massive
sure.
amounts of money, they control people's desires, and they obviously, just like as the lobbyists shouldn't be writing laws, stockholders and stockbrokers shouldn't be setting policies in terms of, they can't wait until we bomb Iran. They can't wait until we bombed Iraq or we went into Afghanistan to throw the Unocal pipeline in.
Yeah.
These are the things they drool and salivate over, that they just, murder, death, destruction.
Well, yeah, this is the murderous extension of the doctrine enunciated by Calvin Coolidge, Silent Cal, who should have stayed just a little bit more silent, when he said, "The business of America is business." The business of America is the killing business.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it's boiled down to. The only heavy industry we have left outside the automotive industry is the heavy industry that is largely dedicated to killing people.
Mm. Oh, The military-industrial complex.
Sure.
Something we never listened to from Eisenhower. The only thing, I mean, and it's actually funny, we speak about that. We looked at the negatives throughout the world, like Bush, you know, maybe Bush will instigate people to actually get up off their couch, you know, put the beer, maybe take the beer with them, but, you know, leave the beer down, get out there and raise their voice and, you know, actually participate in the freedom and the liberty. You know, and it's the same thing with when you look at the Nazis. You know, I know, hold on. You know, Hermann Göring, for all the horrors he wrought, he gave us the line of course the people do not want war. It is up to the leaders of the country to set the policy, and the leaders drag them along and denounce the pacifists as traitors and exposing the nation to terrorism and weakness. And, you know, that's really all you got to do to get the wars going. You know, and in that, what he did for the people of the world to expose them and show them just that little tactic is, in a sense, a positive out of the, you know, extreme negatives that the Holocaust and the World War II brought upon.
Well, yeah, that and even before World War II gets fully started, I don't know. Maybe George Soros or one of these wildly wealthy liberals should fund up a massive reprinting of Smedley Butler's War is a Racket and just give it out on the street corners.
Yes, indeed, at our local food co-op here.
Yeah.
We discuss about him all the time. And, you know, I mean, the library tends to, that book is no longer, it's out of print, and we don't stock it, we don't loan it out, you know, because it's from 1940, you know.
Yeah, and you know, oddly enough, I think I've seen the full text of it online.
Yeah, that's why they want to shut the Internet down, because the Internet gives you and I and everyone else.
Yeah, you can find all kinds of creepy stuff, like Mark Twain's War Prayer.
Like 1984.
Yeah.
Free.
For free.
It's there. I mean, it's there for free to read and check the, you know, quotes. And, I mean, it's a complete research website devoted to 1984 and what it means and references to present-day history and all sorts of things like that. I mean, but what it's going to take, I mean, it's really going to take this cheap money that we get. My wife, she's in a union. She's a nurse. My mother's a nurse. She does work for the county, which is a big difference because she actually works for a private nursing home as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, nursing homes and prisons, I said this in the chat, are, you know, that's going to be the businesses of the future because people keep getting old and we keep making laws to throw people in jail. But the union, for them, well, they take a while to do what they got to do. And there's also a lot of negative about the union in her job from people that should be benefiting from the union. And I think it's a lot of that old, that about in the 60s when all of a sudden the unions, you know, the Hoffa-esque odor.
Well, yeah, and that was used to great effect by the anti-worker movement.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, you know, one, you know, oh, Jimmy Hoffa's dirty, therefore they're all dirty. I mean, it was one of the worst and most shamefaced cases of guilt by association that this country's ever witnessed. And, sad to say, Robert Kennedy was a big part of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think that we need to decentralize. I mean, I know, like, everyone says, the central powers. But we all have these little unions, and the little unions should step up to the plate, even though, I mean, we're going to have laws change. We're going to have things done that doesn't require congressmen who live, I mean, their entire career of 30 years in the House and, you know, presidents. And if Bush could, he'd love a third term and a fourth term and a fifth term, and he would never stop. So we need to also, you know, do things that get the monikers of power. I was laughing so much when you said how you expected to walk down K Street and see the Gates of Mordor with the eye of Sauron above Aberhoff's little building there. And, you know, what are we going to do in order to get these people to? We have to wrest the power from them, and we have power in the money, and we know who owns the media, and, you know, all these things, all these laws that they've enacted since Bush has really, I mean, Clinton paved the way, and we have to also admit that, you know, with NAFTA, with all these jobs going on.
Welfare reform.
welfare reform.
You know, we passed the 10th anniversary of welfare reform about a month or so ago, and I was talking about it during the show, and the statistics are all out there, Albert, to show just exactly how disastrous welfare reform has been for the poor. You know, we require mothers to go to work in order to continue getting food for their children, and yet we provide the mothers no health care for the children while they go to work. So, you know, what?
I relate to that. I grew up, my mother was a single mother raising me. She put herself, I told you, my mother's a nurse,
mm-hmm.
and she's an RN, and she put herself through school, but she also was on welfare, so my brother and I could eat as we were being raised. And now when you look at these regulations, I mean, my mother wasn't a crack hoe. She wasn't buying a Cadillac. I mean, we had this was in the early 80s when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like a 1967 Pontiac, or no, whatever kind of car. Just an old Red Baron, we called it.
Yeah.
And thank God that my mother's brothers were all mechanics and they could, you know, mechanically inclined. They could, you know, fix the car for virtually nothing.
Yeah, back when you could work on cars.
Back when you could work on cars, obviously. Exactly. You know, however, you know, I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for my mother actually getting help. My father didn't pay child support. He didn't pay alimony. I mean, he just didn't pay.
That's where we've lost so much of the war, Albert, in terms of framing what it is we think government should be best at. The Republicans, you know, we completely lost that battle because they created an impression in the minds of America that if you are taking any kind of public assistance, that you are therefore a bad person and that you're taking it for life.
Oh, I haven't always had the easiest times. And I've actually personally, I've refused to go on assistance for one of the reasons is, you know, I mean, we're great now, but, you know, there's been times where it's been a little shy, and especially after 2001 when all those layoffs and
mm-hmm.
those other things were going down. But, you know, I refused because my perspective on it was there were other people who needed it more than I did. You know, I mean, I could survive yeah. with eating just pasta and spaghetti sauce, you know. But other people that couldn't even get that, you know, they needed it. But you know, we look at what happens to them. they have to go to work. And they use, what is it, 58% of all the jobs in Boston that require this work, you know, welfare to work program,
yeah.
only 58% of them within a mile of a bus stop. I mean,
look at the food stamp program, Albert.
No, yeah.
First, you know, this is West Virginia, where you know the majority of the people are on some sort of state subsidized or federally subsidized health care. There's a huge food stamp budget. We pay, and this is not a slur at America's military. It's really, really not. But we pay $29 a day, so soldiers can kill people in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we pay $29 a day to Halliburton to feed them. Okay, we don't pay $29 a day for a newborn baby. Okay, that we're not willing to make the same investment in life that we're willing to make in death. I mean, that's what it really boils down to. The $29 a day that Halliburton gets to feed every single soldier in Iraq has been proven by virtue of Pentagon audits to that you know it consists of literally rotten, bloody meat, rotting vegetables,
mm-hmm.
Wage slaves from Pakistan and Indonesia who are literally penned up at night. You know, and that's us. You know, and we've got a media that won't report that. Meanwhile, the food stamp program continues to go down and down and down and down. A woman who got $700 in public or $700 in Social Security when she got her Medicare Part D benefit this year. This was the White House's own estimate.
Yeah.
Her food stamps got cut $50. Food stamps got cut to $17.
And meanwhile, food prices go up. And, you know, and besides the fact of, you know, the deficiencies that come into food when you look at how they're made. And, I mean, even the petroleum cost of food when it has to be shipped from third world countries.
You yeah.
10,000 miles for a Caesar salad and things like that.
Our Caesar salad comes from Chile.
Yeah. Mine, personally. Mine's local. But.
Well, yeah, I know. But, and all of that's covered brilliantly in Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. I'm just over the moon about that book. It opened my eyes in so many ways.
Oh, indeed. That's on my list, actually, for reading. And, we spend that much on war. We're spending, what, $2 billion a week now?
The bill just went up.
$2 billion a week.
Did you hear the excuse for that? Or did you see the excuse for that from the Pentagon?
I don't know if I could stomach it, Bob. I really
the
don't.
The pace of action has increased.
Yeah.
You know, that's Pentagon speak for we're fighting more, we're fighting harder, and we're losing faster.
Yeah.
In other words, the faster we lose, the more it costs to keep losing.
Well, we're in a guerrilla conflict. You don't win guerrilla conflicts.
No. Never. Not at all.
We won the Revolutionary War. The Revolutionary War, the British complained that we wouldn't stand and fight. You know, like the dumb way they used to fight that way.
Yeah.
Because we'd hump in the trees like the Indians and, you know, do all the things that would be guerrilla conflicts. And they lost. They couldn't sustain.
And we got called terrorists.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, and that, within itself, would get it right in back into the whole war on terrorism. I cringe every time I hear the word homeland. This country isn't my homeland. It's my country.
It's the Union.
It's the Union. It's the United States of America. It's not my homeland. It's not the fatherland. It's not these things. And these terms, just as we speak, and the people that sit on their couch and they don't pay attention, they don't care, they don't get up, they don't go out into the streets, they don't do any of these things, but they'll suck onto these little bumper sticker political sayings, you know, support the troops. I don't know how many stickers I see, the little yellow ribbons, support the troops. I have a sticker out in the backyard, a sign in the back of my yard says, support the troops, bring them home. I mean, we don't support the troops by not giving the body armor. We don't support the troops by cutting their VA benefits, especially when you look at when we're cutting VA benefits for brain trauma.
Yeah.
I mean,
didn't that just make you want to go run around in the yard and tear at your hair? We didn't cut those benefits, Albert. We zeroed that line.
Zeroed them. Cut? Zeroed? Yeah.
Eliminated. Stopped. Don't care. You know, it just rots my mind to consider what we do to these people, and that's what makes it.
What they do get? You know what they do get?
What do they get?
I was in the military, and I used to have to take a lot of flights. I was a cryptological technician operator. I had a top secret clearance. One day we'll talk about that. But I used to take a lot of MAC flights, and I would sit in the MAC airport. And I'm from New York originally, and I would literally see these people that I would totally classify as homeless bums. Okay, long beards, dirty clothes, the whole nine yards, but they would be on this base. And I would see all these guys, and I would be asking, you know, like, you know, chiefs and whoever else I'd see, who are these guys? Oh, those guys are veterans. What they do is, because they're veterans, they serve 20 years, they can't get a job, you know, besides the whole military job training nonsense.
Yeah.
I can't get a job doing what I was doing. I have a top secret clearance that I can't get a job doing what I was doing. I was a cryptological technician operator. Where do I go do that?
Well, now there's a job market for that. You know, you could work for Blackwater or Custer Battles or, you know.
Bob, I have a soul.
Well, there's that, too.
You know?
I'm fairly well educated, I think, Albert, and I could be out there in the job force working in Republican corporate America making a fortune.
True.
And you know what? I'd be dead in a couple of years. I mean, I know that. I'm anti-authoritarian. I have a real problem with structure.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, some person who was a hell of a lot more ignorant than me would tell me something to do, and I'd tell him, you know, which bus to get off in the corner of room and screw you.
Well, and that's what happened. But I'm the same way. I'm a lot of the same ways, and I can't sit here and just listen to a bad authority. If I was Lindy England, as we spoke of yesterday, if I was one of these people, you know, and I know how it is in the military. Everyone wants a top secret clearance. Everyone wants to be a Navy SEAL. Everyone wants to be a Green Beret. That's how it is. I mean, even
sure.
If you're a truck driver or you know, one of the cooks or something like that, everybody wants to do that.
You want to be a Green Beret cook.
Everybody. There's even sites dedicated to debunking people who say, you know, like if you know someone in your life who says that they're a SEAL, you can go onto a website and prove them wrong because they'll check the records. Yeah, there's even sites like that because that's the psychology. Everyone wants to be special.
Yeah.
You see, but we sit here and we look at these things, oh, we want to be special, we want to do this, we want to do that. You know, and that's what happens when the CIA and Blackwater and Khaki and all these guys, they go into, you know, of course, under the orders of Bush and Rumsfeld and all the other Bush crime family members, they go in there and they say, all right, you want to be part of something secret, top secret clearance?
we need you to soften up these terrorists. We need you to train them with dogs and beat them and put menstrual blood on their face and punch them and kick them and beat them until they die. We need you to do that. You're being a secret agent. There are people that will jump off a cliff for an opportunity like that. You mean I'll be like Steven Seagal or something, you know?
I'm gonna be deep cover.
Yeah, oh yeah. And then you can go back to your friends. Oh, I'd tell you, but I'd have to kill you. Listen, I was a cryptological tech. I have a top secret clearance. My job was so boring. If I told you about it, you'd die from boredom.
Well, you know what I'm rereading right now, Albert. My lovely wife brought it, but you know, from time to time they just clear books out of the library. The idea horrifies me, so we try to give some of them good homes. She brought me a paperback copy of Failsafe.
Oh, okay.
You ever read it?
I haven't read it. No,
well, you know, you know the basic premise. The situation. You know, nothing could possibly go wrong. It goes wrong. And it doesn't give away any of the plot for anybody who wants to go back and read it. But the thing that sets everything off is a couple of top secret clearance guys 300 feet under the ground in Omaha whose job is to sit at consoles and watch the transmitters that transmit to the little black box in the B-52s. And they're like tech sergeants or whatever, and one says, "Hey, give me a smoke," and the other guy tosses him a smoke, and the way they describe it in the book, and suddenly, you know, a little capacitor down, or a little transistor, or a little hoosis, you know, a little gadget, little widget, wadget, whatnot, suddenly goes, pfft. And you smell something? You smell something that stinks? Yeah, what stinks is the fact that you won't buy your own damn cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that little pfft that causes World War III.
Well,
and you know, you talk about, you know, how boring it was. I can't imagine. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago, when the tapes came out from inside Cheyenne Mountain from 9/11? Vanity Fair had that audio, and we ran it on the show.
I missed it.
And it's astonishing.
I'm going to listen to it.
Because, well, if you go to Vanity Fair's website, I think you can probably find the raw audio still. It's astonishing the level of ennui, if you will, that takes place in those jobs. And I think it's good for people to hear someone who had a clearance like what you had say, you know, it's terribly, terribly boring.
It is. But I can tell you something I did do.
Okay.
Something I did do, and I can tell you this. There was the back during, I remember, I'll never forget this, because I remembered watching the news and actually looking at it and going, wow, I had a part in this. Back right before, this is right after Jennifer Flowers, 1998,
mm-hmm.
the Clinton era. 1997, 98, something like that. I had an order. It was a Zulu order. And I had this order to send, Carrier Group 3 or 7. I can't exactly remember the details. I told them basically I would relay messages and top secret messages. And I would sit there and say, right, you have to go to these coordinates, such and such and such. And I remember doing that a month beforehand. And this actually relates to where we're already sending, you know, and people are sniffing it. They're smelling the BS. They're sitting there saying, yeah, there's something going on because we're sending a carrier group to the Persian Gulf now. But I remember I personally sent the message to the person, to the carrier group 3 or 7, to go to the Persian Gulf. It was like the day before, a couple of days before, the Jennifer Flowers thing broke, and, you know, which we all know is BS. That broke, and we started sending cruise missiles, Operation Desert Fox,
mm-hmm.
okay, which was targeting all the weapons of mass destruction plants and the storage rooms and all that other stuff, which was pretty much 100% successful. Obviously, to this day, there are no weapons of mass destruction.
Right, and you know, and that was when these Republican idiots got up on the floor of the Senate and said, "Well, you know,
wag the dog." Yeah. Oh, we just wag the dog, which was actually interesting because, you know, yeah, Bill Clinton might have done a little of that. I'm not going to take it away from him because it is a tactic that government period uses. It's a tactic they use to distract. All of a sudden, what are we talking? We're not talking about Foley, you know, and his messages, which is he's a grooming pedophile. Sorry, Lil J. But I mean, we're sitting here looking at this stuff. These guys are beyond hypocritical. They do these things, and what are we talking about now? The another what's his name?
Another schoolhouse
another
shooter.
School shooting. Now, actually, there was a school shooting just up in Weston, which was it's sort of close to me. You know, he went in, a kid got, and I don't understand that either, but I'm not going to get into it, where, you know, these kids, they get suspended for doing something wrong, and they go and shoot the principal. But now, this is different. This is a man going into an Amish school, mm-hmm. with an Amish country.
Target of opportunity.
Which is, it's almost like a, what's the name? The name of the, Frank Sinatra was in the movie, and then George Clooney remade it. I can't think of it. Brain fart.
Ocean's 11.
No, not Ocean's 11. Where they they had the killers. They trained them to be killers. And
The Manchurian Candidate.
Wait a minute, I can hear them.
Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, this kind of stuff reminds me of that. Paranoid, whatever. That kind of stuff reminds me of that, that all of a sudden this guy goes in to kill Amish people. They're Amish. They make furniture. They make bread and cheese and milk.
I know. Yeah, and I'm guilty of being a little bit of a sarcastic jerk, because when I first heard about it and before I knew the exact parameters of what had gone on, I thought to myself, a shooting in an Amish school? Shouldn't it have been a knifing?
They don't even have guns.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing. It was a complete disconnect.
It's amazing. And now we're talking about that. You know, we're talking about it nationally.
Yeah, and Bob Woodward's revelations and actually, you know, for all intents and purposes, and all the water carrying he did for the Bush administration, it looks to me like the stuff that's being released in this book of his is him standing up and saying j'accuse, and, you know, saying it straight at Rummy and straight at Condi, and, you know, it's just not true. You know, and that's their response. And America goes, oh, okay, well, Condoleezza said it's just not true. But Peter's right. That woman could remember what pumps she was wearing on a given day.
Yeah, I agree. Peter was right. But did you hear what Andrew Card was? Did you hear him on, I forget where he was on, he was on Fox News something today. It's on Crooks and Liars, if anybody wants to see the video. He's a zombie. He needs new batteries. That guy is just, I love the president. I love the president. I support his decisions. Well, and, you know, the Fox guy was like, well, but, you know, he's just trying to make the president look bad. Oh, but I have to respect. I mean, he was on respect mode and locked on it. I want, you know what I want in Washington?
What's that?
Real people. I want real people that work a 9-to-5 job. I want real people that have to live paycheck to paycheck. I want my leaders to be people that maybe not the most educated in a Yale or Harvard or anything. I want real people that know what it's like to have a house in pieces.
You want a whole Congress full of Wellstones is what you want.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, one of the things, that's one of the nice things about, I regret where I live in Wisconsin, because I have good senators in Congress. He's okay, but I like Feingold, and Feingold's my senator. But I wish I lived on the east side of Wisconsin so I could vote against Sensenbrenner, because that guy...
Oh, he's insane.
Oh, I hate that guy. Oh, this guy makes my blood curdle. And Herb Kohl is not, I'm not a big fan of him either, but he did at least vote against this 8279, the bill, I think it's 8279. He voted against that, which is the torture bill. Of course, Feingold voted against it, and, you know, Sensenbrenner makes me beyond ill. I don't know what's going on in the east side of my state. Don't blame me, because, I mean, I'd be out in the streets if it counted for anything. I'd be out in the streets to go against Sensenbrenner.
Well, you mentioned Crooks and Liars a minute ago, Albert. Did you see this breaking? Foley says he was abused by a priest when he was a kid.
What
happened to the party of personal responsibility, Albert?
Thank you. Oh, I love the horn. I love the horn. I'm so addicted to the horn. I mean, because it's like, it's exactly, that's the kinds of things I scream in my, I don't watch TV, but that's my thing. I don't watch TV.
Oh, I've got this whole Elvis thing going on. I can't watch for 5 minutes without going, you know, wanting to go get a firearm and shooting it. Bring me the peanut butter and banana sandwich, and let me sit in the easy chair and shoot televisions.
No, I would shoot if I had the money. I would. I'd do the Elvis. I'd be shooting my television every 5 minutes. But I got kids, little kids, and I don't want them to react.
Right.
You know, contamination. But no, I seriously, it's like, where is the common sense? That's what I'm trying to say. You know, where is the common sense? Where's the when
well, yesterday he was checking in. He was checking in, and he was a diddler because he was a drunk.
Oh, yeah.
You know, apparently that one didn't fly, Albert.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm a chronic curser, and I haven't said a single curse word, and I'm drinking a few beers tonight. I don't say I haven't said a single curse word.
But see, that's because you have some level of control over your id. If we want to get Freudian about things, now compare that with Dear Leader in Russia. You know, with his stupid pie hole half filled with a roll.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And you know,
stop that ish.
Yeah, tell him stop this. And you know. And the thing is, I get the idea that he, with George Bush, probably every third word is something vile, foul, or filthy.
Well, he's the fart king.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's right. He likes to fart on new interns and stuff.
Ew. He's a scat man. Oh, man, is that too far?
No. That's okay. No.
Seriously. I mean, well, we all know his poppy was involved with the Franklin cover-up, and I've mentioned that last night.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all heard the rumor that, I forget who was it, was it a Vanity Fair reporter saying that he saw Bush give fellatio?
That's the woman who was running for governor, or is still running for governor, as a Democrat in Nevada.
Yeah.
It may have been reported in Vanity Fair, but yet she came right out and said that she knew he was involved in a guy girl three way because she was the one who set it up and she was the one who participated.
And he gave it expertly and.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know what? And that's the thing is.
But it's not about the it's not about the sexuality. I don't want to get misunderstood with that.
Exactly.
It's about the hypocrisy. Damn it! You know. You know, you want to be gay, be gay. You want to be straight. I mean, and it's not even if you want to. It's if that's what you are, be what you are. You know, the closet is a dark and terrible, lonely, horrifying place, and no one should have to live there.
Just ask Scotty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ask Mr. Gannon. You know, ask these people. I can't forget about these people. I just can't. I mean, the closet is a horrible and dark place, and we shouldn't be, you know, maybe this is because we're liberal. You know, I grant you, of course, the quotes when I drag it out like that. We shouldn't be passing laws against homosexual marriage. Listen, if people want to sit there and be able to go into a hospital and do all the things that only a married person can do, let them get married. How does that affect you? It doesn't. The Daily Show is great for that. It skewers. You know, these hypocrisies. But it's sad to say that the Daily Show and the Colbert Report, which I got to give props to Stephen Colbert for what he did at the press dinner.
Yeah.
That was one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life.
This isn't the Titanic. This is the Hindenburg.
It's soaring, he says. I these people just, the hypocrisy, and that's what I want my friend, like, my friend who bought the vehicle, I want him to see these things. And and I think what it is, and I really do think what it is they don't want to rock the boat. They want to buy their new couch. They want to buy their new car. They don't want to think about the horrors of the implications of now we can enable terrorism. Now we can pick you up in the middle of the night. Now we can take you to Guantanamo Bay.
Now we can attach jumper cables to your genitals. Yeah, I know.
And the worst, this blew my mind. I screamed about this. I guarantee you the NSA has a few copies of it. I screamed this to the phone with my relatives. I called them up, and I'm like, do you understand now they're passing bills? Remember when the legal advisor of Berkeley, of nonetheless, whatever, Chin, whatever his name is, I'm bad with names.
Yeah.
I'm good with faces, bad with names. He said, oh, well, you know, if Bush wants to detach, you know, crush the testes of a child in order to, in front of their parents to torture them, that would all depend on why the president would want to do that.
The cool thing was the audio was there of it.
Oh, what is that? Wait a minute. Whoa.
You know, this is not a discussion to be having in America. This is not a discussion that should take place in America.
Exactly. Torture, I mean, you know, you talk about, it shouldn't, it's beyond, it's so beneath the ideals of America. It is so disgusting to sit there and think that people would say, you know, how are we going to get this taxi driver from Baghdad to talk? Oh, I know. get his first and eldest son, which we all know, I mean, throughout culture-wide, the first son is the biggest present
sure.
the creator can bestow upon you. So let's get the first son and crush his testes with vice grips in front of mother and father. Then they'll tell us where the bombs are and where the weapons of mass destruction are. When we all knew...
And what's more, they'll tell you anything you ask them to.
Hey, you start... You do that. You touch my daughters. I'm Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
I am Osama bin Laden. You touch me in a certain way like that, and you get me because you get me alive. I'm Osama bin Laden. I'll tell you, you don't have to pull out many fingernails for me to flip out like that. I don't want to sit here and deal with pain like that. Nobody does. And to think that these people could even consider torture when, I mean, how can you can't have terror and freedom in the same sentence or paragraph. Or
and we are willing to sacrifice it's that whole Ben Franklin thing about
yeah.
people who would sacrifice some to get another are going to have neither.
Exactly.
Yeah. Albert, we've got to roll on, but boy, did I enjoy this conversation.
Oh, I'll call you again. I love you.
All right.
See you tomorrow.
You take care.
Bye.
Hey, do one of those 12-ounce curls for me, would you?
Hold on. Ready?
All right. Later.
Goodbye.
Bye now. Kicking back, having a couple, enjoying some conversation radio, and maybe even working on saving what's left and worth to save of this nation. My God, I like that. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Here in Iraq. My head had eyeballs in the back. It's a bummer that my Hummer is an armor to a T. Show me your support. You spent $1.93.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow closed at a record high today, beating its previous record set on January 14, 2000. We'll have the closing numbers at the end of the newscast. In Florida, disgraced former Representative Mark Foley said through his lawyer today that he was molested by a clergyman as a teenager, but he said he takes full responsibility for sending inappropriate emails to teenage male pages. House Speaker Dennis Hastert has rejected calls for his resignation as the fallout from Foley's resignation continues. In an interview with conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh, Hastert blamed Democrats for leaking the messages. In Stockton, California today, President Bush expressed confidence in Hastert's ability to deal with the scandal and said he supports an investigation into the matter. Mr. Bush said he was, quote, disgusted by the revelations and disappointed that he would violate the trust of the citizens who placed him in office. In North Korea, officials announced today that they plan to conduct the country's first nuclear weapons test. Experts say any flaws in the design of the suspected underground test site could release radiation into the atmosphere. From Cairo, one of the stops on her Middle East tour, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said a nuclear test would be seen as a provocative act. She also urged Asian nations to reevaluate their relationships with North Korea. In Italy today, a hijacked Turkish Airlines plane with 113 people aboard safely landed. The hijacker surrendered and is now in custody. Officials say he was seeking political asylum and wanted to avoid military service. In Baghdad today, Sunni and Shiite lawmakers endorsed Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's peace plan. It calls for the creation of joint security committees to monitor efforts to stop sectarian violence. But both Sunni and Shiite leaders have blocked plans to discuss details of the proposal. Meanwhile, more than 50 people were killed around the country today. 9 U.S. soldiers and 2 Marines have been killed in the last few days. In eastern Afghanistan, 2 more American soldiers have been killed and 3 wounded. NATO is expected to take command there later this week. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is now in Afghanistan. He said the war against the Taliban can never be won militarily, so instead they should be included in the government. Democrats accuse him of waving a white flag of surrender. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Two American astronomers received the Nobel Prize in Physics today. They found evidence about the origin of the universe and how galaxies developed. The European Space Agency says photos from one of its satellites shows there have been record losses of ozone over Antarctica. The hole is expected to exceed 11.2 million square miles this year. New Census Bureau data shows housing costs are growing in nearly every part of the country and becoming a burden in the Midwest and suburbs nationwide. The highest home prices are on both coasts. A new survey shows that the U.S. labor market continues to weaken, with the number of planned job cuts for September exceeding 100,000. Luxury handbag maker Coach is suing Target for trademark infringement for allegedly selling fake purses. The bags were sold in a Florida Target store and carried the Coach logo and tags. Laboratory Corporation of America has signed a $3 billion deal with United Healthcare to become its exclusive national laboratory. And the U.S. has agreed to forgive 24 of the $114 million Guatemala owes America on the condition that it use that money to protect its tropical forest ecosystems. The Dow closed at an all-time high today, beating the past record close of 11,722 set on January 14, 2000. The Dow was up 57 points at 11,727. NASDAQ up 6, S&P 500 up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Quarter past the hour, 45 minutes left in the program for this evening, and we've got a very special caller online right now. Don't often hear from the younger set, but Carrie is calling from Alabama. Hey, Carrie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
I just wanted to have some people aware of the floods that have been going on in Buffalo Creek, West Virginia.
It's flooding in Buffalo Creek?
Mm-hmm.
I must have missed that. Tell us about it, please.
I was watching this thing on a History Channel with my mom and my dad, and they were talking about all these floods that have been happening. And my dad said that, I forgot it.
No, that's okay. I think I know what you're talking about now. When the sludge dam gave way and roared down Buffalo Creek in about 1972.
1970s around that time.
Yeah, yeah. Hundreds of people were killed, and it was all Agnes was around there at the time. She was probably about your age then.
Wow.
But she was young once, Carrie.
I know that.
But you know, it inspires me to know that that your mom and your dad are helping you to learn about stuff like that, because you know what, when you grow up, it's going to be part of your job to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, as a responsible grown up.
Well, my parents were telling me the only way you can have people aware of this is to educate them.
That's right. Your parents are very smart people.
Yes, they are.
How's school going?
It's going really great.
What do you liking best so far? Which grade are you in now?
Fifth.
Fifth grade. Wow. And what's the best part so far? No fair say in recess.
That's really hard.
Do you like science best or social studies or?
I like them all.
That is a very, very good answer, because as long as you stay like that, you've got a very, very bright future in front of you, Carrie. Well, what do you, when you learned about things like the Buffalo Creek disaster, Carrie, how does it make you feel? What does it make you think?
It makes me think that how can I help, and if there's any way I can prevent it, how? That's exactly what came to my mind and what those people were feeling when that happened. They were feeling that I've just lost my family. What am I supposed to do now?
Exactly, exactly. And can you imagine having to live without your family?
No, I can't.
Well, make sure your mom and dad take you to a couple of the mountaintop removal websites so that you can see what's going on up here in West Virginia. There's even some strip mining in Alabama too.
Cool.
It's a tough process. It destroys the land and it's hard on people. If you can imagine it. There are kids in an elementary school not too awfully far from here, about an hour away from me. Those kids go to school every day with about 3 billion gallons of poisonous sludge, just like what was in that Buffalo Creek Dam, literally hanging over their heads while they go to school. They have to breathe coal dust when they go to school. It's hard enough being a fifth grader and hard enough to, being a kid this day and age. Can you imagine what it would be like to have to breathe poisonous coal dust to go to school?
No. Knowing how much, at least they're trying to make the air as clean as they can here, but all I know is that when you breathe that poisonous gas, it can kill you instantly.
Exactly. There beside that school, Carrie, there's a tank of something called anhydrous ammonia. And if that tank ever bursts, everybody in that school and in that general area are in terrible, terrible trouble. So, it's wonderful that you're learning about these things. It's wonderful that your parents are helping teach you about these things. Do you ever talk about stuff like this with your friends at school?
No, I just learned about it.
Well, I tell you what. The more you learn, I think you'll want to share the information with your friends so that they can see what's being done. And this is all America, whether it's up here in the Appalachians or down there in the Tennessee Valley, we're all Americans together, and we have a job to help protect each other, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Carrie, how are the grades coming so far?
They're doing good. I got my report card. Well, it's not really a card. It's a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's computer printout now, isn't it?
Yeah, really different. I got all A's on it.
Atta girl.
Yay.
Yay, Carrie. Okay, let me check the chat room here. We'll have to get you some applause going in the chat room. Carrie, it's awfully good to hear from you. Tell your mom and dad hi for us.
Okay, I will.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's very inspiring. That sound like a fifth grader to you? I don't know. Carrie may need to jump a grade. What do you think?
Two grades.
Yeah, there are two grades exactly. Sharing. You know, it's a lot of what we do here is a whole bunch of show and tell when you get right down to it, isn't it? We've been isolated, we've been ghettoized, we've been separated. The right wing has done everything in its power to try to convince us that, we're just a tiny fraction of America and nobody thinks like you liberals do. Well, guess what? Most of America thinks this way. We're not buying anymore. Now, what's it going to take to fix things, change things? I do not know. But I know right there is a darn good reason to work on it. A very good reason. And there are millions of those reasons around here. We live with three reasons here in the house.
One.
And, four reasons. One's off finding herself right now. There's an 18-year-old reason. There's a 12-year-old reason. There's a 10-year-old reason. And there's a 9-year-old reason. For you and me to talk amongst ourselves, to try to figure out how we fix these things and to move forward on it. You know, I saw in, I guess it was yesterday's paper, the Charleston Gazette, that the Environmental Justice Tour has passed through Charleston. And they did a flyover of some of the mountain range removal sites and some of the sludge dams. And there were people from other parts of the country who were simply horrified at what they saw. And it's, you can't look at this stuff and not be horrified. And imagine, if you will, that the guy who is responsible for most of this is trying to take take elected government away from West Virginians. And he doesn't even live here. But he doesn't think that we deserve to have our own representative. So he's going to go out and he's going to start hollering about gay marriage so that he can get, putting a big rock in the school building and, we don't have family values. Well, you know what family values to me does? It involves something besides blowing up the places where the families live. Right? Yeah. And now, shifting gears, of course, we couldn't. You knew we couldn't get through a night without a little bit of Mark Foley. Oh, okay. Are you sickened? Are you stunned? I did this. I sent these dirty emails because a priest diddled me. You know, maybe Mark Foley was listening to Rush Limbaugh yesterday. Because Mark Foley said, or Rush Limbaugh said that Mark Foley's problem was just like the Pope's. So then today, Foley comes out and said, it's because a priest diddled me. So, maybe that's what it is. Let's go to the phones. Cody joins us from California. Hey, Cody, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, you?
I'm doing real well. Say, I just wanted to get the word out about worldcan'twait.net and the mass political protests that are going on this Thursday, October 5th, in 115 cities. And everybody has no reason not to be out there. I mean, if there's probably a protest going on near you, I just wanted all listeners to know about that. Head on over to that website.
Worldcan'twait.net.
Worldcan'twait.net. And, the mission is to drive out the Bush regime, and this is the way that you do it. I mean, this could really... show these actors that they ought to take notice.
Well, I hope we could get a bunch of people in the streets. I hope maybe we can get some media coverage of a bunch of people in the streets.
That's the tricky part, but that has to happen too. And then the other issue I wanted to bring up is that apparently the LA Times said that Josh Wolf is not a journalist, and I have a article up at powersandmorrison.com where found some interesting decisions with the courts of California that I cut and pasted those up there so people know that LA Times is completely mistaken and that the courts do recognize people like, I was interested because, what if something like that happened to me or Sarge or somebody else at Powers and Morrison, and the courts actually consider something like Powers and Morrison a web theme and a little bit different than a blog, but it's very interesting because when they're getting close to threatening our liberties.
Is this some jurisprudential hair splitting, Cody, on their part?
No,
webzine versus blog versus you are a journalist, you're not a journalist. I mean, at some point, is this a matter of some judge trying to figure out how many journalists can dance on the head of a pin?
I know it's funny, but they actually say that some of these bloggers are to be feared. Like they quote Matt Drudge or whatever his name is, the Drudge Report guy, and so the courts have been paying attention. And at least in my state, where that people like me and people like Sarge and people like Nathan Morrison were considered were supposedly protected and considered journalists, and for the LA Times to say that Josh Wolf isn't a journalist, all they did was appease the federal government, and then they came after the San Francisco Chronicle reporters, and those guys are in danger of hanging out with Josh in the same cell block.
Well, and there's so much depth to this, Cody, because when you look at the torture bill, have you gotten a chance to read that thing cover to cover yet?
I haven't done it cover to cover, but I have been listening, and I have been reading. And it doesn't, it's hard to keep up with all these guys. It's just such an exciting time to be involved in politics.
Yeah, and the evil is, evil's coming in 12-packs now.
Yeah, that's disturbing.
When you see that, you know, aid or materially support provision in the torture bill, and you real, and then there's the part about being detained without access to habeas while the determination is being made as to whether or not you are a citizen.
Yeah.
Suddenly, everything that you're working with in terms of journalistic freedom becomes critically, critically important.
Very important, and it's, you know, it's interesting to note if you go, I was over on Wikipedia and I was looking at their explanation of the Hamdan Rumsfeld case, and it was, and after looking through that, I'm like, the courts and the Congress are pushing each other, now the Congress has defied the courts, and now it's going to be up to the courts to say it again. It's like they've already, this issue should have already been settled, but it hasn't been settled, and now there's going to be a pushing contest between whose authority is going to be listened to. Is it going to be the president? Is it going to be his Congress? Or is it going to be the Supreme Court? Because everybody's in conflict right now.
In conflict and actively lecturing the courts. Did you see the wise words of Alberto Gonzalez saying, how dare you, to the court for the Hamdan decision? How dare you disagree with a wartime president?
Yeah, it's interesting because John Dean, at his column on finelaw.com, just tears up Gonzalez and John Yoo and all of those other phonies that are in Bush's cabinet and in his administration on the law. And John Dean was former White House counsel to Richard Nixon. And,
right.
You know, he used to be a Republican, and then they tried to blame Watergate on him, put the knife in. I mean, these Republicans will put the knife into their own people's backs.
They absolutely will.
It's not even safe to be a Republican.
And in some ways, you know, in some ways we're seeing the predicted fall apart or disintegration of the Republican Party. I found it very interesting. I go over, you know, and I wouldn't recommend that anyone do this back at home. But I go and I read, I call it Newsmuck. But it's a right-wing news site. I go and I have a look at it just to see what passes for thought in their tiny pea-sized brains. And this is a beautiful one. Evangelical leader Dr. James Dobson said he doubts that conservative Christians would support a presidential bid by Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney because he's a Mormon. we're going to see things. The fur is going to start flying the closer that we get, especially after November 7th. The closer that every day we get closer to November 2008. You're going to see blood on the floor in the Republican Party.
Yeah, that's there. And even Joe Scarborough was just ashamed last night. I was so surprised to see him almost pretty much concede defeat because of this this scandal that they're going through right now.
And well, the Washington Times came out today and demanded that Denny Hastert resign as Speaker of the House.
Now, that is pretty surprising coming from them.
The Mooney Times? You're darn right it's surprising.
I was telling you, I'm actually impressed with their integrity.
I don't know if it's integrity or if it's a matter of, you know, get out before you kill us some more. Because the drip, drip, drip revelations, you know, for me to find out today that Foley now says it's because he was diddled by a priest.
Oh, no. The excuses keep coming versus...
Well,
oh,
you know, yeah, because I did it because I was drunk, didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, but he's checked into rehab, so...
Now let's blame the Catholics.
Now we blame the kiddie-diddling priests. So...
Just playing politics. I hope nobody buys any of this garbage.
No, he's a pedophile. I mean, you're not a pedophile because of anything. You're a pedophile because there's something fundamentally wrong with the way your brain works, and you get off on little children.
Well, put him on a Bill O show and have him explain himself.
Oh, I want to see those sit down to a plate of falafel. But, you know, Bill O had Foley on his program. I found an excerpt from that maybe over at John Aravosis' America blog, I believe it was. I saw a transcript of Foley from Bill O'Reilly, moralizing. I mean, you know, the really good, high-toned, we have family values, the Democrats eat babies for dinner kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's totally flipped up on them, and now they have the egg in their face. And I'm just, I feel good that their hypocrisy is coming out.
But the question is, do we have the guts to make them live with it. And you know, the deeper question that I asked last night, Cody, is that, you know, are we going to treat this as an isolated incident, or are we finally going to begin to recognize that there is something perniciously, sickly, institutionally wrong with the Republican Party?
This is the time to strike, Rob. This is the, I mean, this is our opportunity to just ream them and just take it over. I mean, this is the October surprise that nobody was expecting, but now, I mean, we got to take advantage of our opportunity. And there are more important issues than this issue, but for some reason, just being frank, that's the issue that that seems to really hurt political parties more than, I mean, they could steal $9 billion, and that's a fog fact.
And they have.
And they have. But this scandal like this comes out, and this is what the, you know, this persuades more people for some odd reason, and we just have to live with that and use it as a tool to get some people with some real values in there. And, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to Dan Rather, and he was talking to Bobby Kennedy, and he was just explaining that, you know, investigative journalism is dying. So, and I was thinking that that's all the TV, the glass toilet television. Some of it, I mean, it makes me sick. I was watching MSNBC, and they were just taking the president's word for things, saying, oh, well, I'm glad that he cleared that up. But they don't challenge anything. So that's why I'm issuing the PowersandMorrison.com challenge. One, anybody who hasn't checked out our website, say one day a week that you would normally spend 1 hour watching, Hardball or something like that, go on over to PowersandMorrison.com, and people who are listening, and just check it out and pick anybody. It doesn't have to be me, Sarge, Real Dre, myself. It just check out what we got there for, and just substitute an hour of your normal TV time on PNM, and it's worth it.
It's absolutely worth it. There's a wealth of information over there covering a broad, just a broad range of different subject matter. I don't know if you guys have the editorial meetings and decide what you're, you know, who's going to do what. But one of the things that I have noticed is that you do an excellent job of not doing the same thing. It's the variety there that really strikes me.
We have great diversity, and I can't give enough credit to a lot of the people that don't call in the programs, that the radio programs, and should, because we've got just excellent people that call us, and just everyone does it, because everyone's different walks of life, and we aren't trying to just come from one angle. We're trying to give, you know, the best commentary that we can and get those censored stories, those stories that slip out and that you're not going to catch on the TV or on a lot of talk radio programs, and that's the interesting stuff.
Yeah, it very much is. Cody, let me ask you, just because I personally don't know, and I think other people might like to know too, how did Powers and Morrison come to be?
Well, Nathan Morrison is sort of the brainchild of this, and he used to work for MSNBC as the science correspondent. And from what I gather from him, he just got sick of how phony it is. And he decided, I mean, I'm really proud of that guy for just taking the initiative to go into, you know, that's a lucrative career, and to say, no, I'm going to do a citizens media website. Started in January, and we've had a lot of success. I was on Starge's column last night, and I couldn't believe it. We got 10,000 hits last month. The month before that, we had 5,000, and the month before that, we had 2,500.
We're
doubling every month.
Well, that means that the message is getting out. That also means, Cody, that people are hungry for, I don't know, what do we call it, non-traditional truth.
Atypical truth.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a sad commentary in itself on the nature of the American experiment, is that truth has become a rare commodity.
Well, how do you balance the truth? Everybody has to be fair. They try to be, you know, programs try to be fair and balanced. But sometimes with the Bush administration, when they're wrong, you're wrong. There's no way to balance wrong. And then they try to balance wrong, and that's what turns people off, and that's what makes people just despise the glass toilet media. And then that's our niche market. That's the Powers and Morrison, the Salon.com, the RawStory.com niche, where they've allowed this, the mainstream media has allowed us this opportunity to exist. So they're doing their job right. We would have to do it for them, and that's what we're doing. We're doing it for them. That's why I was really passionate when I got the email from Josh Wolf's mother telling me that LA Times is trying to say he's not a journalist, and I do my research. I put up the case sites. I showed people that they are wrong. And that's something that the due diligence is what's lacking severely in mainstream media today.
Well, you know, you remind me of something that one of our organized labor friends has said. He said, if business would treat its workers like workers deserve to be treated, there would be no need for a union at all. And I think you're seeing and manifesting something similar in what you're talking about, because it's the failure of the so-called professional media, which is a joke, to do its daggum job that makes it possible for you guys to shine the way you do.
That's the truth, and we need more organized labor and the corporations. Just I was reading this eloquent speech by Bobby Kennedy Jr. just about how corporations are fine. He owns a corporation, but they can't be in charge of running government. And they are getting too close to running government, and democracy is walking the fine line between business owning government and government owning business. And we have to we got to not teeter too much on one side or the other, and that's the balancing test that is our lives.
Well, you know, the growth that you're experiencing, Cody, makes me think that you're gonna be up there with the salons and other, you know, the so-called big boys pretty doggone soon. And the trick there, and I don't think it's going to be a challenge for you and Nathan and Sarge and the rest, Real Dre, bless her heart, Freckles, it's not going to be a challenge for you guys to keep honest and not get what we call it back here on the front porch, the big head.
That's right. And, you know, I've caused some trouble with some of my commentary for Nathan when I had that spat with Air America. But we tell the truth, even if because we're on the side of the truth, even if it's not good for us, even if it's cost us some promotional points. Because, I mean, that's how you are. That's how Mike Malloy was. And we're on the side of the truth.
Well, and frankly, it's another case of not enough people are doing that right now. That makes it so stirring to see when you do come across it, like what you guys do at Powers and Morrison. Cody, I can only hope that it continues to grow. We want to help you guys grow, and God knows we so appreciate the kind efforts that you all have made to help us grow here at the Horn as well, because you've been a big part of a real jump in listenership.
Well, thank you so much, and more people need to listen to the Horn. I mean, it's absolutely what I've been looking for.
Well, I hope we can continue to do that. We'll try to stay honest too. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks so much.
See you, Cody. October 5th, right? Oh, by the way, where's your World Can't Wait rally going to be?
San Francisco, California, and there's one in cities everywhere. 115 cities. WorldCan'tWait.net. Drive out the Bush regime and let them know we're not going to take it anymore.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks, Cody.
Have a good one.
Bye now. You know, it's this. Tonight we've had a sort of a running theme of wondering, you know, if we get it, can we fix it, and how long will it take if we do? It's folks like Cody, it's folks like Sarge, Nathan, the whole gang at Powers and Morrison, our friends Clyde and Wally and Dookie at WD40.com. Bart at bartcop.com. These citizen journalists are the ones who are turning the tide. And the neat thing is, we're about 9 miles ahead of the right wing in terms of reaching out via the internet. That's why the Horn is here on the internet instead of, you know, being part of the fifth smallest radio market in America or something like that. We don't have time for that. We have to reach an entire aching nation right now. Now, there's about 18 minutes left in the program, probably about 15 minutes worth of conversation left if you want to get in on it. The number is 877-443-2366. Email roars into bob@headonradio.com. And I wanted to get back to something. I had an email earlier that speaks to the need we all have to reframe our own issues. And this is an email that deals with what we were talking about in the so-called healthcare debate. And what I was told is, in the interest of accurate names, never, and maybe you can take this to heart too, never say healthcare again. This is the what we're dealing with in the United States in its current present form. This is the sickness profit industry. And a final note from our correspondent David in Middle Tennessee. For all those well-meaning, socially conservative union members that voted to whack the queers and stop abortion, here's your payoff. Because, you know, it's statistically impossible there wouldn't be. There are so-called conservatives who are also members of unions. You know, I've talked to people who know them, and they don't understand why they're conservative or call themselves conservative. Because, you know, the people that conservatives vote for, God, their sole aim in life is to take away people's rights to stand together and collectively bargain and get fairness for everyone involved. Now, I've got, okay, here's a stupid little story for you. I was in a big box store. No, it was not Walmart. But it was another big box store. And I think, you know, you guys know I'm a foodie. And I have my creature comforts. I like, among other things, I love wings. So I see this 5-pound bag of frozen chicken wings. And they're blazing wings, so, you know, they're already heated up. You know, they're already spicy. And they're breaded. And they're marked, you know, I mean, they're sitting there next to some Tyson's and so forth, and it was Target, okay? It was when I was in Charleston. And the sign says, you know, $3.88. And the Tyson's are like $8.26 a bag for a pound less. So at $3.88, they're mine. I didn't think anything more of it, but I went to check out, and they went through the scanner. And I said, you know, those things were a pretty good bargain. And the checkout girl lady looks up at me and says, $8.26, you think that's a bargain? I said, no, because it wasn't. It was $3.88. Well, we had to stop everything. So another employee and I walked back to the freezer case, and, you know, there they are, marked $3.88. She looks at me and says, well, you're right. I went there to rip them off solely on to beat them out of $5 on a bag of chicken wings. So we walked back up to the checkout and look at the lady, and she says, "Yep, they're marked $3.88." She goes, "Oh, well, okay. Now we have to call management." You know, and this was supposed to be an in-and-out, fairly quick little trip. And, no, we got to call management, so, come to check out. And the guy comes up. And, again, we walk back to the freezer case, and we stand there, and we look at those $3.88 bags of chicken wings. And we turn around, walk back up, and he looks at her and goes, yeah, they're $3.88. She goes, okay, and punches in a code on the cash register keyboard and overrides the barcode, and it's $3.88, and 30 minutes of my life are gone. Do you ever look at your existence that way? Do you ever look at your life that way? The time that you'll never get back? I lost a half hour of my existence in this big box store because the place is so harshly overmanaged that the checkout, the checker, couldn't act on her own initiative to do the right thing once she found out the first time that I wasn't trying to beat them out of $5. I mean, Walmart is a sleazy, slimy place. This was a sleazy, slimy place, too. God. And I said, well, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make this so complicated for you. She said, oh, it's not your fault. It's just the management people around here. And I leaned over real conspiratorial-like, and I said, you know, you could form a union. And she looks at me and says, I could be found out back of the dumpster beaten half to death, too. That's where we are in 2006 Bushmerica. That's where we are. It's where we live. And it's sad. Because That woman doesn't need to be thinking in terms like that. I could be found beaten to death outside behind the dumpster out back. It really made me shake my head. Because apparently I know that they have been given some kind of lecture in there about you don't want no union coming in here. This is an attitude that has been fostered all across this land. That you don't want to try to stand up against us because we, by God, will crush you like a bug. And it's sad. You know, meanwhile, I should have just gone to a Kroger. Because at least I know, because I've been through this kind of stuff in Kroger's too. You know, I mean, it's not just the big box stores that screw up their pricing. But you know what? Wouldn't have taken 30 minutes of my life to get the problem fixed. Because they're not quite as thoroughly under the thumbs and terrorized by their bosses as what the big boxers are. Because, among other things, they've got union representation. Wonder how long it'll take... Wonder how long it will take to see the Kentucky River line of cases be used on other areas of labor. Oh, sorry, you're out of the union. You're a supervisor. You told somebody to sweep up that broken box of pasta on aisle 16. That makes you a supervisor. You're out of the union. Jesus. Headline, Walmart to use more part-timers, wage caps. Did you catch this? This is how bad it's getting for Wally World. Walmart Stores, Inc. is pushing to create a cheaper, more flexible workforce by capping wages, using more part-time workers, and scheduling more staff on nights and weekends, according to the New York Times. The executives say they embraced the new policies for a large number of their 1.3 million workers to better serve customers. You got that? To better serve customers. Customers will be better served by people who are paid less well. Does that compute for you? Does that two and two? I mean, does that get to four? Or does that sound a hell of a lot more like six and a half to you? Bad math. Investment analysts and store managers say Walmart executives have told them the company wants to transform its workforce to 40% part-time from 20%. Jesus, what a sickening race to the bottom we're involved in. Walmart denies it has a goal of 40% part-time workers. Although company officials said part-timers now comprise 25 to 30% of its workers, up from 20% last October. Do you see where this is going? The prices aren't coming down because they're going to more part-time workers. No, the Walton family's private fortune is going up. How much money do they need? Meanwhile, Walmart next year is cutting back the options that it offers new workers for health care coverage. And they're promoting a low-premium, high-deductible plan. The value plan. Oh, okay, it's a value plan. Who's it a value to? For the love of God, who is it a value to? The Walton heirs. That's who. Let's go to the phones. Jim joins us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
You know, it's just amazing how they will label things and try to make something else what it's not. It's kind of like what the Germans used to do during World War II.
Arbeit macht frei.
Or special handling or resettlement, that type of thing. Quickly, last night I was watching a program on the Industrial Revolution, and they were talking about some of the worst jobs in history. And, of course, they had one of the things was the manufacture of matches and how women, you know, were the primary workers. And because of the phosphorus in there, they got phosphor jaw. In other words, their jawbone would literally just collapse.
Yeah, it got dissolved.
They weren't even allowed to have their lunch away from where their workstations were. So not only were they breathing this phosphorus and they glowed in the dark, literally, but also they were ingesting it in their food. But it was one of the first strikes that ever occurred in industrial England. And, you know, you can see how labor has had to fight and claw its way to the top and, you know, be on the defensive against the excesses of management. I mean, there is a symbiotic relationship between the two, but, you know, management, when they're given a chance, will always take advantage of its workforce.
And that seems to be a uniquely American and, by extension, European thing. You don't see so much of it in the Japanese model, do you?
I'm not sure. I don't know that much about the Japanese thing. I know the Japanese have I always thought they had intense loyalty to their companies, and their companies tried to treat them right. But, I mean, you know, it just seems like some people refuse to pay attention to the fact that if you will treat the worker like a decent human being and give him his a rightful share and a decent wage, that you're going to have a happy, satisfied worker who wants to stay on the job, who's going to give you good product.
Well, look at the difference. I think you're very well said there, Jim. And you see, you can see it in the difference between Costco and Sam's Club. Now, they both do roughly the same thing. It's a big box, and it is a cut rate, lower price, so-called wholesaler of bulk volume goods.
Mm-hmm.
Costco is union friendly. Their drivers are Teamsters. There are union shops for people who work on the floor, things like that, and they have high employee retention. On the other hand, they sell things for roughly the same price as what Sam's does, but the Sam's, on the other hand, practically has to have a revolving door in the back because they can't keep employees.
Oh, I know it. And listen, if you're going to buy any kind of stereo equipment or electronic equipment, don't think you're going to save anything at Walmart, because those guys are so well. This is what one guy told me who worked there. He said they just take their stuff and throw it around like basketballs because they just don't give a damn.
Right, and they don't know anything about it either.
No, they don't, and they can't keep anybody there long enough who can gather enough institutional knowledge to tell you a Sanyo from a Sony.
That's the absolute truth, and you know that's where real value is. The value isn't in cutting somebody's hours so that he has to, live in a constant state of quiet desperation. The value is in having dedicated employees who actually want to learn about what it is that they're marketing.
Well, that's like that promo you have about the guy who is being given the quota, where he won't stay in his chair or start
babbling again.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's just the way a lot of people treat workers. I mean, to them, they're not even human beings. And it's a sad, sad, sad state of affairs, in my opinion. But I can tell you one thing, and I know you're going toward the end here. People might think this ship of state in this country is watertight, and those watertight doors are in place. But I know of another instance in history when watertight doors didn't work. And we see what happens, so we need to watch it.
I think you're right. And the question is, what happens to this country when the wheels come off?
Well, or the watertight doors don't work.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Jim.
Good night.
Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Bye now. That's it. Got a quick email here from Cliff. He says, I have to disagree with you, Bob, regarding molestation of children. I believe it's a well-known fact that people who molest children have at one time in their younger years been molested themselves. Not making excuses for Foley, but, I misspoke. There is molestation in a lot of people's past. But, you know, there are ways, but there are also people who have been molested and who did not go on to molest. And so I still say that there's something fundamentally wrong in the way the brain works that allows that molestation to replicate itself in the next generation. Let, you know, who am I? Yeah, Dr. Bob, not quite. The show tonight was produced by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, in New Digs, is, yay John, yay Gail, the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org streams and maintains the archives of all the programs on the Horn, podcasting too, and does so in conjunction with our streaming partner who simulcasts at Shelby LaPre over at radiopower.org. Both of these individuals do great work, and they do it without sending a bill. So remember them when you've got a little something extra laying around. Okay? Every program on the Horn happens because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who get up every day, and they go to work, and they build the American dream. And in so doing and supporting this network, they're saving the American dream. Many thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, our news editor, Gene, at headonradionetwork.com, fantastic moderators in the chat room. It's amazing what we're doing, all of us together here with the Horn. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
When you're swallowing all life's lies,
here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, good afternoon, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. It's about 7:30 past the hour. Program produced, as always, by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman is our announcer. The phone number here is 800-TALK-YES. That's 800-825-5937. Or you can email during the program, Mike D. Malloy at earthlink.com. .net. However you're listening tonight, Sirius Satellite Channel 145, the IE America Radio Network, radiopower.org, whiteroasesociety.org, blah, blah, blah. Don't forget, Bush Free Fridays again tomorrow. We're going to try it again. A lot of scary sound tonight from Bush at the President's Dinner last night. Can you say PNAC?